PTB Nation, PTB Nation. Welcome again to the monthly installment of PTB NXT, where we dive into the black and gold brand that is NXT. I'm going to jump right into it and invite my co-hosts on so we can roll through this and maybe keep it under 3 hours, but no promises. So, Jen and Tim, how are you guys tonight?
Doing good, Jake. How you doing?
I'm okay. I can't say I'm great, but I'm getting by.
Existentialist Jacob Williams here. I love yes. it. I'm about the same. I say every PDB NXD show that we do. Let's hope this one goes better than the last time.
Yeah.
Speaking for the listeners. No, I can't wait to do
listener
this.
Who's a hypothetical
listener who's been hanging in there,
yep.
trucking along since our first episode. No, I have been really looking forward to this episode, actually. I mean, I look forward to all our episodes, but I don't know. It seems like we've got a lot to get into here. We're running up to a pretty big show, and we've got 3 episodes of NXT television on tap. So, I know we're going to get into those, but I know what everyone has been looking forward to. Our new tradition that I think we've established here on PTV to XT. What is that, Jake?
That would be our developmental names that we have, that we christen upon each other each episode, which makes me about as happy as the goodies I got from Trader Joe's today. So let's get into
butter.
Yes, many. I love Trader. I don't know if y'all are on the Trader Joe's train, but
definitely. Yeah,
so many
chicken salad.
So many good like frozen fat chip foods at Trader Joe's that you can't get like anywhere else.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It's like
rich man's hungry man meals in their frozen section. It's much better than, I mean, you have your pecking order at your regular supermarket. I mean, there's a banquet, which is total doo-doo shit.
Trash
doo-doo shit.
Yes.
There's Hungry Man, which is maybe a step up from that. Boston Market, kind of, they have some kind of
bougie.
A little bit more bougie. But, I mean, none of that touches the products and the selection at Trader Joe's. My God.
Yeah, and they kind of, I feel like Trader Joe's has a reputation like, they're almost like, not on the level of like Whole Foods, but they're almost seen as having, you know, a lot of vegan food and stuff like that. But really, the majority of Trader Joe's is like fetch it food. Honestly, it really like it's like Philly cheesesteak, Korean bao buns and shit. Like just like somebody just smoked a bunch of weed and like came up with frozen food. That's Trader Joe's.
And like charge a shitload of money for it.
Yeah, like macaroni and cheese balls and stuff. Like
an amazing business plan.
Yeah, but okay. But anyway, enough of Trader Joe's. Let's get into these names. So I kind of just keep the order we always do. I will go first. So my new gimmick.
Now we should perhaps say who we are currently known as before we leave these to the wind, I guess. And I do have them written down.
Good.
I know this is going to get probably hard to keep up with, but. I will do my best here. So, Jake, you are currently known as Rooster Studebaker. Living the gimmick. Jenny, you are the famous one and only Tammy Floppy Sex.
Yes.
Kind of an NSFW NXT name, but
I'll be sad to see Tammy go.
I know. And I am Reed the Shocker, or just Reed Shocker.
Reed Shocker.
I think we shortened it too. Yeah.
Reed Shocked the System.
Go ahead.
Okay. But so these have not been working out. So we're back in there with whoever the trainer would be, Bill DeMott or something. And he's going to give us our new gimmicks that they've come up with. So yes. Gonna get it over, brother. So I will now be Lenny Drizzler.
Wow.
So I'm trying to think what Lenny Drizzler would be. I feel like they would play off that it has drill in it.
Mm-hmm.
So like my finish would probably be some kind of you know, like, I don't know, the big drill or some shit.
Or the big drizz, maybe. They'll play off of that. You just... you like...
The asteroid
drizz
buster.
And drool kind of commingle in my mind, so maybe it's a... I don't know. There's definitely a moisture situation going on with this fellow.
But it does make me think that I would not get many wins, because it almost seems like it would be a reference to the common wrestling term, the drizzling shits.
Drizzling shits.
So I feel like there's not a lot of promise. This one might be a rib. I don't know. I don't know if this is main roster worthy. But all right. So continue on. Tim, you will now be Rolls Feeble.
Rolls Feeble?
Yes.
Wow.
First name Rolls.
Rolls? Okay.
So I definitely think you are this would definitely make you a rotund individual.
Yeah, so going back to our Trader Joe's conversation, I am a fat shit and frequent patron of Trader Joe's. And boy, maybe we're just all getting ribbed here with these names.
And then Feeble. Rolls makes you think it would be like the lost member of like Heavy Machinery, you know? But then Feeble is like, it almost seems like a manager, like a, it's almost like an oxymoron, because like Feeble kind of makes me think of like a,
like I get knocked down. I do a lot of, I take a lot of bumps, but I don't think I'm on offense. I mean, I might have the good fat guy offense that we don't see for Mojo Rawley that we wish we did.
Yes.
But I think I'm working a lot of dark matches.
Yeah. It's weird because Rolls makes you think of that, but then Feeble makes me think of almost like a Harvey Whippleman type character, like a little skinny guy in like a suit that's like five sizes too big, just like a child that put on their father's coat or something.
Right about that. Okay.
All right. So, and then finally, Jenny, you will be. Now, I found this surprising. Now, this is all random. I do not skip. So. This one actually would be the second sauce-based name that you have been given. So the heads up, the people in charge apparently think that sauce is working. You need sauce in your name, but now you will be, so it only gives you male names, but Keith Spread Sauce. I mean, you could be like cat Spread Sauce.
Spread sauce.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Spread sauce sounds like it would be something at like a, not like a cheap fast food, but like one of the upper tier fast food places. You know, like a Zaxby's.
Like a Zaxby's, of course. Yes, I love Zaxby's spread sauce.
Yeah, like some special sauce that they put on the sandwich or something that they're known for. Mm-hmm. And you're like, gotta have that spread sauce.
Keith, I am gonna call an audible here and change Keith to Cat. Just Cat, so that you know that Jenny is not a Keith. I mean, she was a Tammy last time, so I don't know what that came up with prior to the introduction of Tammy. But we've gone from Drip Love Sauce, her original name, Tammy Floppy Sex, to now Cat Spread Sauce. So,
which Drip was kind of a gender neutral sort of first name. True. Not really sure if Drip was male or female, so we kind of just ran with it. But yeah,
there is could be a great combination.
I gotta say, I'm disappointed with this batch of names.
Are you upset that you're stuck with sauce again?
No, I'm okay with sauce, but I don't know. These are weird.
I like them individually. I do like them individually. I do think they all sound like massive jobbers.
Yes. I don't like that. Normally, there's no champs amongst us.
Yeah, you have some variety in there normally.
I like the great Flanagan who went on to hold the title for seven straight years in the 70s.
I know it.
Okay. So now that we have those gimmicks, we'll move on into the actual shows. Which, as Tim kind of mentioned earlier, this is a big set of shows because we're moving towards the first takeover, which these three shows lead into the first takeover, which hasn't been built a ton before this point. Like, I can't remember a single thing that they've really set up for takeover, so they really need to get cooking on it, and so we'll see if they do. So
it was only announced 2 weeks ago that it would even be a thing. So I guess we haven't had a ton of time to really get our acts together. I mean, it felt like we had some rough shows before that announcement by Triple H of, hey, we're going to do this thing called TakeOver. Mm-hmm. And then they did seem to get some focus, I will say, without necessarily putting matches together right away for that TakeOver. It felt like things did snap into place very quickly.
Yeah, so we'll see how things shake out. Okay, so our first episode will be the May 8th. 2014 episode NXT. We have the B team on commentary, which would be Rich, Renee, and Albert. Our first match coming out of the gate is going to be our favorite Emma with her bubbles versus Charlotte in the women's tournament. I think this would have been like a, I don't even know, like quarterfinal or something. I'm not really sure, but we're in the women's tournament. Albert, of course, is losing his mind over the bubbles like he always does, way over the top with the bubbles. And we get our classic female commentary about how these are girls. And they get into this debate about whether girls can be friends. And I forget who said, but someone said girls can be friends for a little bit.
For then a little Albert's, while. Yeah.
Then Albert says they can't be friends. So they're still pushing this whole like mean girls dynamic. So the match itself, so Charlotte, kind of a lot of what she did in this match was go to the head scissors until Emma, the next notable spot was Emma pulls out the Cobra, the Santino-style Cobra, but she hits Sasha, which then allows Charlotte to do a roll-up, and she does like a bridge thing, which I like the concept of, but it didn't really work out too well. Like, she didn't hit it perfectly, and like, you could kind of see that Emma probably could have just wiggled out in reality, but they kind of went with it. So it's probably something she needs to work on, but it's a cool concept because it looked pretty cool for a pin. I never really thought this one got going too much. I thought the finish, like I just talked about, was like a cool concept, but it didn't really, the execution was a little bit off. But as a matcher, really wasn't much going on. I was kind of shocked that Emma went down this easily. So I went 1.5 on this one.
You know, on paper, I thought this might actually be kind of good. I mean, Charlotte is slowly but surely coming along, and we've been kind of pleasantly surprised with Emma. So, but I, like you said, there was something off on this. The timing was at the end, and I wasn't really buying a lot of this Emma, like, I don't know. She seems very easily like led in the ring. Like, Charlotte was like in control most of the time here, and she doesn't really hold up with Charlotte for me. The sock Cobra I thought was kind of lame. And at one point Renee was talking about Emma's protein packed brownies.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't know. There might be some nonsense happening right here.
Yeah, on these shows, I would not be shocked if, because this is not the first Renee thing line we're going to get, that I would not be shocked if Renee was eating some brownies during these tapings, because she
was wild and out on the
yes,
show.
Yes.
It was really weird. So, yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 1.75. Mostly for Charlotte reasons, but kind of disappointing for this women's tournament.
Okay. I agree with all that, other than that I'm a little bit lower than you guys on the rating. I just went 1. And I think that's because I feel like these two have a much higher ceiling, so my expectations were higher going into it. You know, we're doing this women's title tournament. And this is a quarterfinal, so, or is it a semifinal?
I feel like it's quarter.
Yeah, because we still have quite a few left.
Yeah,
we have.
We're gonna see Charlotte again. Yeah, so quarterfinal here. I don't know. I just thought maybe we'd get a little bit more out of this than a really quick sort of nothing match, and with a weird comedy spot by Emma. And I get that the idea is to put over sort of this dissension between Charlotte and Sasha, because what had happened was Sasha, Sasha gets up on the apron and eats shit. on that Cobra sock, whatever it was, by Emma. And I mean, she sells it like she's been shot, which was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that allows Charlotte to get the win, was Sasha's distraction and basically sacrificing herself. So we're still doing that little slow burn between the two of them. So I like this storyline aspect of it, but as a match, ain't much happening.
Yeah, they're really pushing the, and they'll continue to do this throughout this tournament, the Sasha Charlotte, like, crash course sort of thing, like Albert's really going after it, and so we'll see how that goes. And the Emma train seems to be losing some steam, you know, like she got handled right here. It's some of this tournament, too, that I guess right here it didn't surprise me much because you're still pretty far out in the tournament, but this tournament, as we get more into it, kind of surprised me. And like, I thought as they got into it, they would let them have a little bit more in the matches.
Mm-hmm.
Like how we said this one, like we expect a little bit more, but it really didn't get a ton of time. So I was hoping as we continued through this, they would give them a little bit more time to put something together. Cause usually there's two ways like tournaments usually go. It's either like the, like WrestleMania 4 style where it's just like nothing matches that kind of suck just to like get through it. But usually, I guess in my mind, when I think of like an NXT tournament, I'm thinking of things like the Cruiserweight Classic and all, where the whole point of it is to really get over like this pure athletic contest, which I kind of thought they might start going for, but it's not really happening.
Yeah, I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they're not confident enough in them, which I guess is understandable. So. All right. So we'll keep rolling. We find out we're going to have a battle royal tonight for the number one contender. Quickly, what was your reaction to figure out that this is where they were going to go with this for the number one contender?
I don't hate it. I will say that I wonder if they knew that there was a takeover that was going to be announced and would be happening in the near future back when that Brodus Clay push started, because like we just blew that off. Right. And so now you're thinking we've got 3 weeks to go here until takeover. We need a challenger. There's nobody else logically waiting in the wings. Really. We sort of finished off a number of stories, and Neville, you know, is now needing a challenger. Like, he's not actively feuding with anyone else. They didn't transition from Brodus into like another dude right away. So, I mean, I guess it's a quick, easy way to hotshot somebody to a number one contendership and still do a build. That's not exactly the direction they're going to take, but I could see that being the rationale. So I don't hate it.
Yeah. I was kind of, hashtag main roster, like his little two main roster at first. Oh. But I like the way they kind of went a little bit different with it. So
me too.
Yeah. So, all right. We actually get introduced to two new tag teams, which just blew my mind, which is
like, I know, right?
Which is like one more tag team than we've been introduced to in the past like 3 months. So our first new team is the Legionnaires.
Oh, God.
Consisting of Sylvester LaFour and Marcus Louis. So they're obviously French, and they will be facing El Locale and Kalisto, who I don't think they had a name. I think they just called them El Locale and Kalisto.
Right.
So it was exciting to actually get some tag teams that maybe the Esquinchin can get some competition. So this was pretty much a squash match with the fresh Legionnaires pretty much doing the job duty. I thought Marcus, Mr. Louis, looked pretty rough. Like he was moving pretty awkward, like in extreme. He had a good look. He kind of looks like impoverished Randy Orton, because he's like a tall kind of guy with some tattoos. But if Randy Orton is normally known as being like one of the smoothest wrestlers ever, Marcus was not that, because he was very awkward and rough. And I thought whenever Kalisto came in, he looked like on another level from everybody in there.
Yes.
That's doing all this cool, like lucha moves. But yeah, it was a squash. I went one, the, El Locale and Kalisto, win this match.
You can get a little awkward and rough around me. Not really. I mean, you know, I actually went a step further in thinking that the Legionnaires, as they are known, are more of kind of an impoverished La Résistance.
Yes.
Like, just the two of them have that kind of, they even sort of work the same way with, like, utilizing the quick tags. And there's that, I thought there was a decent little heat segment on a locale for whoever this individual is. For a good portion of the match. I mean, not that it's a long match, but I don't know. I thought it was solidly enough put together. Good hot tag to Kalisto. He hits his high spots. So this was sort of a, it probably doesn't deserve 2 stars, but it sort of went out there and got the job done. So I didn't really want to knock it. And I gave it the gentleman's 2 here.
I did too. The ladies too.
Okay.
If you like will. I think it's Renee or one of them says, Ascension has really been begging for some competition here in NXT. I'm like,
yeah, they're like,
serious, yeah, right?
They're like, they've beaten every team. It's like, what team? Like, what is it? Cowboy Troy or whatever his name is. Cal Bishop.
Fucking Too Cold or whatever the fuck. Well, anyway,
we're going to hear more of this as our, like, they do acknowledge some of these things we're talking about. But anyway,
the whole match, they're talking about the French dudes, right? They're talking about Marcus Louis and they're talking about all his past jobs. One of them includes a guard at an insane asylum.
There you go.
And he's a Taoist.
He's a Taoist. I'm just like, the whole time they're putting over the Legionnaires, and I'm like, I don't know, they're kind of like ho-hum, like they're not great, and I'm like, I don't know, Lucha dudes look all right to me. It's like a tale of two Matt, like, it just was really boring when the French guys were on top, and then as soon as the Lucha guys started taking control of the match, it got... it just flipped, like it was so much better. So that's why I gave it the ladies 2. And they saved the ending, because other than that, it was pretty standard.
Yeah, it's like they were just waiting for Kalisto to come in there and like do his cool moves and stuff. But yeah, it's like that. It's like on commentary, they were trying to do the thing where it's a new team, so you're trying to establish their characters, but all the details just seem so obscure and like did not add to anything. Like,
and it's obvious that the Lucha team has a much more better story. Like, they didn't even try to, like, talk about them at all. They're both new teams. Why are we just focusing on the French guys?
Yeah, really. They're just like, oh, Lucha guys, they wear masks.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Or Marcus Louis, he's in. It's like, I guess it just was like, okay, he was a guard in the insane asylum. Okay, like,
what the cool. Fuck?
Yeah, so.
Maybe he knows Nathan Jones. Build off of something there. Could be that the idea is that they're trying to get over the Legionnaires a little bit more because, in a way, like, they need more help. They know we're going to see more of El Locale and Kalisto, mm-hmm. So maybe they will be telling their story in the ring and throughout their matches. But and also not to maybe completely telegraph the ending of they're going to go over because they actually are talented. So I don't
they
know.
They really are nice talented.
It's just very nice to see a non-Ascension tag team
match.
Yes,
I agree.
Even if it's not the best thing in the world.
Agree. All right, we head backstage. It's Adam Rose parting with his Rosebuds, where he says it's party time all the time.
All the time.
Which the only significant thing is there's a Becky sighting. Becky is in the Rosebuds. I don't know if
y'all saw her. Oh, shit. I missed that. Let me see. Oh, yeah. She has, like, some pigtails that look like jellyfish tendrils or some shit.
Yeah, we should keep a running tally of these.
Yeah, we should.
Rosebuds who went on to greater fame. So we had Becky, of course, Braun Strowman, quite infamously, is out there. I think I saw...
Facing.
Well, yeah. Who was that? I think Simon Gotch, who we haven't seen
yet.
Oh, yeah. But he's going to show up later. Him, yeah, he's been out there. Whoever's playing the bunny, apparently that is someone or usually is someone. So, yeah, we should
Well, I want to know who Captain Comic is.
I know. Me too.
Yeah. So instead of facing Adam Rose, which I thought he might, he actually faces Captain Comic, who is the Rosebud that Camacho assaulted on the previous episode.
You were traumatized. I remember.
Yes. It struck an emotional chord with me. But,
it did. He had a hard time with it.
On commentary, they said he hails from Comic-Con, I think is what they said.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Which, so he's from a comic convention, which is interesting. So I looked up some background on Captain Comic. Oh, and yes. He actually...
So glad.
So you, when I tell you who he is in real life, you're just going to be like, what? So Captain Comic is the son of someone famous, a famous musician. If you'd like to guess, I guarantee you will not guess who he is the son of.
Marvin Gaye.
He's not. He's the son of Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, my God.
What?
He's an actor, sir.
No, he's a famous musician. He's like a both. He's like a...
he's a crossover.
I definitely
success.
Know him more for acting than I do for singing.
He wrote Me and Bobby McGee, the original.
Oh, well, everybody knows that. He's yeah. Okay, so what's his name?
Wait, what?
What's his name?
Captain Comic. What's this? Who's this? What's his shoot name?
Oh, I forget. I think it was like...
That doesn't matter.
It was something Kristofferson.
Comic Cross.
Mr. Kristofferson.
Yes.
You whiffed, Jake.
Sorry, I get so caught up in that he was Kris Kristofferson's son. It's the tragedy of Captain Comic. He's overshadowed by his dad, who actually, one of his more recent songs is he did a song with Willie Nelson called Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die, which is a nice jam. But anyway, so Captain Comic's out here, apparently.
Not to be confused with Tony Schiavone's Burn Me Up and Dump Me in Medusa When I Die.
Yes. First, I was trying to wonder, like, what was the thinking behind this match? Like, Adam Rose, like, how is this match made? Like, so he beat up poor Captain Comic, brutalized him, and so we're going to send poor Captain Comic out again to die and get his ass beat in a match alone. So, anyway, the whole match, Captain Comic gets beat up. My issue with this is that, I mean, you're not expecting a match because it's really supposed to be the angle. I did not think Camacho was brutal enough at all to get over what this is supposed to be. Like, he should have came in and, like, completely destroyed Captain Comic. And instead, he won, but it was more of a kind of just a standard sort of squash match. Because I feel like the whole point of this is to get Camacho over as, like, this vicious heel or something. But he did nothing in the match to, like, really get any heat on that. I went half a star on the match. To me, it was, like, too meandering. He should have went in there and, like... Because it would have got sympathy. It would have put more heat on him and Adam Rose, because then Adam Rose has, you know, a real vendetta. But instead, he kind of just went up there and, like, beat him in a kind of standard little match, which I didn't understand. So,
yeah. At what point are we, like, to believe that the Rosebuds are wrestlers? That's what makes no sense to me about this. Like, Adam Rose going to send off one of his Rosebuds to get this fucking ass beaten.
Yeah.
Like, come on now.
Right. You do want to know more about the interior lives of Adam Rose and his entourage. Like, what's sort of their dynamic? I mean,
are they there to buffer for him? Is that the point? Is that to?
Yeah.
For I'm people? Very unclear. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we know they party all the time. They did establish that all the time. But what else? How does this relate to wrestling? Which sort of goes back to a light criticism I've had of Adam Rose. I mean, his party-based offense being what it is. Not sure why he's a wrestler. Why does he have this entourage at his wrestling events, and why do they wrestle sometimes, as we see here? To Jake's point, I think maybe they got too many... letters from angry children and parents of traumatized children.
Angry about children.
Dumb babies.
Dumb babies who were very
But you're right. Like, Captain Comet got way too much offense in this fucking squash match.
Yeah, well,
it looked like Camacho could, like, barely handle this guy. He's sweating. He's out of breath by the end of it. So it's like, you're not cool, dude. Nobody's scared of you. Adam Rose ain't even scared of you.
Yeah, like, he should have got the chair and, like, brutalized him, because then you feel...
I should have opened him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's tight, Tron.
Set his ass on fire, goddammit.
Immolate Captain Comic.
That should be a sign in the crowd.
But honestly, it's because they're so goofy. It would just be like him beating up this poor goofy guy. And like you said, on commentary, they don't do any favors either, because they could be telling us, like, how much Adam Rose cares about his Rosebuds, and they're like his friends, like his little families, his weird, you know, unorthodox family or something, like, to get you invested. It's like they had the right idea. They just didn't do anything to sell you on it. And I think that shows part of it's just the weakness of the commentary, because they just talk about, like, inane shit instead of anything to do with what's actually going on in the match.
I don't
think
they know what to talk about. It's so weird to me.
This crew for sure.
I feel
sure.
Like the three of us could, like, compensate this shit better than they can.
Oh yeah, this could be somebody he had no one. Perhaps he was impoverished, homeless even, and found his family within the Rosebuds. And he never dreamed of being a wrestler, but he's going out here to defend the man who gave his life direction, because he feels like he has to after Camacho has besmirched the good name of Adam Rose and his partying style and all of the Rosebuds, and now brutalized poor Captain Comic. This is a man who had no self-respect. If this happened to him before meeting Adam Rose, he never would have thought twice about it. But now he wants to go out there, and he knows he's going to lose, but he just has to show that he does have some dignity, and that he really represents something now, as odd and as unusual as that may be.
See, you just broke it down way better than them. Like,
yeah.
That was amazing.
It's like
a stream of consciousness. I mean,
it was perfect.
Yeah, it's imagine like a more happy-go-lucky Raven's flock.
Five 5 minutes to actually write a script for this is this dude's backstory and motivation.
Yep. All right, so we head back, and we have an Alicia Fox promo. They do these kind of really quick promos where they don't even have anybody interview them. She says she's gold in her future in the women's tournament, and then we get a promo from a debuting Alexa Bliss, which she kind of just gave a very nondescript promo. So they're coming up next. Let's talk about this Alexa Bliss character. Like, what her gimmick is going in. So she's got, like, kind of like the Dallas Cowboys colors, and she comes in like a tutu, and she's got, like, glitter. So I guess they get her over as sort of a cheerleader or a dancer, sort of, but not completely.
I don't know. I was like a fairy gimmick.
Yeah.
That's what they're pushing on
Tinkerbell type.
Yeah, that's what they say. And I was like, all right. I found it overall just sort of perplexing.
Same.
Yeah, it was kind of, I wasn't sure what they were going for. Not the most notable character, but there's something. They said she was a graduate of the Bliss University with a major in bedazzling. So. Okay.
Bedazzling or bedazzling?
Bedazzling. Wow.
Bedazzling.
Well, okay.
Bedazzling?
And then also, at one point, Rich almost has like a slip of the tongue, and he almost called her Alexa bitch. Like, I swear. Oh, Rich, Mr. Smooth.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, she is more known for her heel character.
Heel, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, they're missing the... I mean, I get it, because she's blonde and she's tiny and, you know, but, like, yeah, she's a natural heel. Yeah, this is not going to work out.
Were I a more cynical person, I would suggest that they took a look at her and said, oh, she's really hot, just dress her up like a pixie, whatever, throw out there, guys will think she's hot and cheer, who cares?
Yeah, pretty much.
But and again, the commentary is not so. This is pretty her debut, and they're not really doing it in her favors because like Renee's calling her Polly Pocket and Thumbelina. Like
Renee was like fucking insane in this match. You know, like, I was like, is she having a stroke right now?
Straight out, Renee.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, because it's like Alexa's debuting, and all you're pointing out is like how small and short she is. Like, oh, look at her. She couldn't be. She reverses into a cradle for the win on Alicia Fox. Oh, that's like her signature spot. She does like a few like athletic sort of spots. So you kind of see her potential as to what maybe she would become or what she could do and what they see in her. But as a match, it wasn't much of a match. I went 1 star on it.
Dang, 1 star? Yeah. Like, this is hard because Alexa is talented. You can see that pretty immediately. She's very agile and quick. She hits her spots and stuff. But Alicia Fox is really rough with her, actually, quite a bit in this match.
I have a theory about that.
She does this, like, sick-looking backbreaker thingy on her. And then, like, she does this cool little pause. Like, she hits her over her knee, and then she kind of, like, hesitates, like, half a second, and then slams her down on the mat, which I thought looked really awesome. But, a pretty big upset, I think, here for Alexa. Good showing for her debut match. Potential here. I went 2 stars on it, Tim.
Okay, I was not quite in the middle, closer to Jake. I gave it 1.25 stars. And I do sort of feel like maybe I could go a little bit higher. But maybe I just wasn't feeling it so much at the time. But no sense in splitting hairs, really. I believe that Alicia, working sort of as stiff as she was kind of handing out receipts, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because early in the match, Alexa does this standing moonsault and just crushes. I mean, lands right on Alicia's face. Mm-hmm. It looked real stiff and brutal. I think Alicia was kind of rattled and pissed about that. Just an idea. I will say that Alicia has a beautiful Northern Lights suplex.
She does.
I always have to call attention to that. And she uses it every match, basically. Which is good for her for knowing what works. So that's always worth 1 star to me, really, seeing that Northern Lights by her. But I like the little upset win here for the newcomer Alexa.
Some of these, like, hurt it for me, and maybe that's why I'm lower.
Could be, yeah. But the gimmick is just.
It looked like her mouth was bleeding a bit by the end of it.
That's Alexa's, true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think she definitely caught like a. Shoot elbow or
I think she probably did. Don't she always shit? Yeah. From your first match, she's trying to get hurt every time.
Shame.
Pretty good debut for Alexa Bliss. I just thought the commentary could have done a little better with her. But
for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So we move on. We get a Neville promo in the back. He says the Funkasaurus is extinct, which I thought was a fun line. He puts over the Battle Royal to see who's the number one contender. Basically saying that he's okay with this. He's going to fight whoever comes at him. Just putting over, doing a standard fighting champion sort of promo. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good way to, a decent little way to kind of kill two birds with one stone. Have Neville show his face, even though he's not wrestling on the show because he's your champion. And also kind of, you know, put over the importance of the Battle Royal. So I was cool with it.
I am, like, really endeared to Neville by this point. I don't know how you guys are feeling about him, but I feel like his promos are classy, for lack of a better word. Like he's like firm, like you feel confident in him as a champion, but he also has a little bit of a sly sense of humor And he's also very polite to whoever talks to him. So yeah, you know, like I feel like he is in a really good spot.
Yeah, classy, I would say, does sum it up. I know I was not super crazy about the self-burial promo that
yes.
he gave his first night as champion, the night after he won the championship. But since then, I mean, he has been giving these, I just call them standard respect promos. Mm-hmm. But it does come off well. I mean, the accent, I will say, probably contributes to
probably
it.
So.
He doesn't just sound like a boring American wrestler.
That's true. I consider that.
But yeah, I mean, he's really been holding it down as champion. I would get behind him in the same way.
Yeah, he's been he's grown on me for sure since it started. So, all right. So we'll continue on with the number one contender battle royal. So what are you guys' feelings on a battle royal in general? It's kind of always a difficult match to follow, sort of.
General rule, I think they suck. I do not like battle royals. I mean, I understand why they go to it here, and I don't really have a problem with it. But, I mean, personally, I just always think battle royals suck.
I don't mind them as much. I'm kind of a sucker for all the little mini matchups you get during something like this. And then they really helped us out because when we start the match, there's like almost everybody's in the ring. We don't see their separate entrances, but then we get separate entrances from some other guys. So it's kind of like, hey, watch these guys during the match. So that was kind of an easy way to follow along. I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, are nowhere near ready for a contendership. So you already kind of know who you're wanting to win this.
Who are you to doubt Mason Ryan?
Yeah, I think so.
Who was your pick for this before we start? I was hoping for Sammy.
Yeah, same. Same
for yeah, me. That's the thing. Like, I'll tell you, I don't. Going into this episode, I was trying to remember like who even faces us. Like, did I watch this first takeover? I was sort of trying to go through my memory and determine, was this something I saw and just forgot about, or did I not right. actually watch this? I don't know who, and I'm like, I don't think it was Sammy this early on. But I guess I was sort of pulling for probably Breeze.
Yeah.
Just because I did remember him getting some shine later in the year. So I was like, that seems like it's starting here, so maybe he's gonna win this. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna root for him if I can put myself in the mode of just, you know, being a fan and spectator.
Yeah, the guys who got the entrances were Mojo, Sammy, and Bo got like their own entrance while everybody else was sort of just Audrey in the ring. Yeah, I think I was going with Sammy, but like Tim said, I don't think I sort of knew he probably wasn't getting it at this point because I just don't remember him getting it that early. I did think it was interesting that they gave Bo an entrance, and like yes. the way he performs in the match, it kind of made you think, you know, he might be sticking around. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really think Mojo had a chance because I can't imagine him having like a 15-minute main event match or something. That would be a disaster.
So, I think that was just for the crowd. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's a crowd favorite.
Yeah. So the actual match, I'm just going to fast forward to the end because the first, you know, whatever 10 minutes of it are just all the guys in the ring struggling, people getting eliminated. I don't know if you had any notable spots in the first part. I hadn't really noticed anything too notable when there was a shitload of guys in there.
You know what I thought was notable?
What's that?
Mojo got thrown out by fucking Jason Jordan.
Your favorite, yes.
I was like, what the fuck?
I did also have written down that Oliver Gray is the first to be eliminated, of course, because he's Oliver Gray. I don't even know who tossed him, but he just kind of goes flying out of the ring, and you're like, yeah, that tracks.
So we head to the finishing sequence of the Battle Royal. So we finish with what I call the double dangle, where we have Sammy and refresh. Sammy. So Tyson Kidd is the one kind of doing the flip-de-do, while Sammy and Tyler Breeze are hanging and dangling off the top rope, almost like as if they were in like the skin of the cat position. But then Tyson Kidd kind of flips over them, and they all seemingly hit at pretty much the same time. And they kind of have the benefit in NXT of it being tape, so they kind of can pick and choose what angle like behooves them to not reveal maybe who would have hit first. I didn't really notice if any. Did y'all notice anybody like? Did y'all have a keen eye to see who was? Did y'all rewind it several times to see who would have hit first?
I mean,
you know, I thought they did a really good job at timing it so that it looked pretty legit the way they all fell.
I agree that it did look pretty legit. I mean, it's sort of a contrived spot anytime you do a double elimination. This is a triple elimination, so it really takes some timing. So that in and of itself, you know, I have to give them props for just pulling it off as effectively as they did. On the slow-mo replay, I will say it looked to me like Breeze was the last to hit the floor by, like, you know, milliseconds, which, whatever, right?
You would hold Zapruder film on.
But it's the type of thing where if it's a real sport and you're going to sit there and micro-analyze the film and play it back, then, you know, I think they come to the conclusion that, indeed, he was the last to land, but they really make it seem like it is truly a wash, that that it is a tie. Maybe you don't show that replay if it gives it away. I don't think it exposed it that much. It's just one of those, you know, if you're paying attention, you do kind of notice, but it's just one of those funny things. And plus, I certainly wouldn't have minded if he just outright won it, because I'm kind of a Tyler Breeze mark at this point. But all in all, I thought that was a creative finish to really any battle royal. I mean, it was pretty standard battle royal up to that point. And general rule, as I said, battle royals, not really my thing. They almost always suck. But this gave us a little, I don't know, a little sizzle. So I ended up going 2.25 stars on this one.
I think I liked it a little bit more than you did. I went 2.75 stars on it. So, Tyler actually pulled off a really good beauty shot in this match. We've kind of been critical of those in the past, but yeah, he really landed a really great one. And then he was, like, you know, in the final three. So, good showing for Tyler. I was proud of him. But I am glad that they did this triple threat thing here and kind of extended out our number one contendership. You know, still up in the air what we're going to do and who's going to face Neville at the first takeover. So, I liked it.
Yeah, Tim, it kind of made the Battle Royal more redeemable for me that at least led to something like this. And I thought it was smart, too, because I didn't think there was any, like, two guys who were had enough history where you could have had, like, an epic showdown in the end or anything like that. So, and it kind of keeps it going to continue to build the suspense for TakeOver. So, yeah, I think I'm, like, in between y'all. I'll give it 2.5 because, you know, the first 10 minutes were just, like, Battle Royal stuff. But I did like to finish. So, like we said, like Jenny kind of alluded to, Triple H comes out. His voice is still raspy. I guess this is the same
more
taping.
Like Triple Horse.
Yeah. Horse.
I actually had that written down because it was such a good bad joke that I didn't want to forget it.
Hunter Horse Helmsley.
Hey,
But he's still horse. But and the crowd already knows where they're going because the crowd's trending Triple Threat. And so he kind of feeds off that. He likes that the crowd's into it. So he asks them what they want several times. And, of course, he makes a triple threat where these three guys are three guys who all fell at the same time will face each other in a triple threat match to find the true number one contender. And that wraps us up for this week. So we kind of end on sort of a nice little, like, pretty – I don't know if it's hot angle, but at least a warm angle, I would say. So that wraps up this episode. So this one was hard to rate for me because I thought not a ton of great stuff on here. There was kind of a lot of junk and even stuff where I wasn't expecting a great match. still kind of disappointed me. Like, of course, the Captain Comic. I've expressed my wish that Camacho would have got a little more vicious. But I did like the ending to the Battle Royal. But I still have to say, you did have to watch 10 minutes or whatever of, like, kind of fumbling around in a Battle Royal before you got there. So I went 4 out of 10 on this one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. One of the weaker ones, I think, for me. I felt there was a lot of nothing in the first sort of half of this. But I think I was a little lower on some of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great, but there wasn't anything super offensive for me. So I gave it 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I'll go 5.5 also. That sounds just about right for this show. There's no great matches. And certainly we've seen shows that are just sort of disposable without that one spotlight match. But we do have something that has been lacking in some of our past installments, and that is a lot of focus. Like, we're all building really steadily towards this recently announced takeover event, and we don't have a ton of time to do it, really. So I can certainly respect any promotion that recognizes, hey, we've got to scramble a little bit, we need to build, but we still need it to be logical. We don't want to hotshot anything. Mm-hmm. So let's take this and put the pieces in place and use the time that we do have to really, you know, stoke that interest. And it's one of those shows that I can see it's maybe not the best, but the gives you something to build off of, where the next week is going to be a little better, and next week maybe even better than that. And then you're really off to the races with TakeOver, fingers crossed. So, yeah, 5.5. In an easy watch. I mean, they're always these weekly shows easy to watch, but this one didn't have anything that, you know, made me hashtag main roster angry. unlike our last episode.
I honestly think the commentary could be a pretty big reason for the gap between me and y'all too. Cause I really,
yes. That's
fair. I think that hurt. Cause to your point, I think when you don't have really matches to carry it, so you kind of need the commentary to be getting over the angles and stuff. And I think they kind of did a kind of a piss poor job, because,
you know, I don't know how this is going to sound, but, and I don't know if anybody's going to be able to relate to it, but I think that what Renee does is what girls sometimes do, women sometimes do, like in a male dominated profession, is she feels intimidated. So she says things that don't really go with what we're doing. Like, she's trying to seem edgy and like in with the boys, maybe. And I maybe just be reading into that, but she seems rattled here. I mean, she hasn't been that great shakes in the past, and they've kind of, maybe that's why they've relegated her to the women's matches.
Right.
And now they're giving her, like, I think they say on that show that she's permanent now. So I think she's maybe feeling herself a little bit, maybe a little bit like, I got to set some sort of boundaries with these boys here. I don't know. But she was off.
Yeah, I think she's trying to find her way, you know.
I think she's even said in the past, by her own admission, like, she hates doing commentary. Like, she does not think she's good at it. It's not really something she aspired to do. It's something that they gave her an opportunity, so she's not going to turn it down, but she's like, that's really not my strength. So I do the best I can, but she has basically admitted that she's uncomfortable. And I mean, I do think she gets better, but yeah, you can probably see that coming through here.
And I mean, in fairness too, she might be the strongest on that comment.
I was gonna say, she's not like, even the worst. I mean,
yeah, like,
for somebody who's
4 out of 10 size, way worse. And
got
Rich,
size, it's ridiculous. And you've got nerd Andy Atherton, Rich Brennan, who adds
Michael Swole.
Nerd Andy, yes. Andy would be much better in that. Rich Brennan.
Okay, well, good news is that we get the 8 commentary team back on this next episode. So let's move on to the May 15th, 2014 NXT. So like I said, the 8 commentary team is back. But we open up with the Esquinchin in there and in a squash match against some big names, actually. Some names that would actually become way more notable than them, which is the team of Buddy Murphy and Elias Sampson. These two fellows, first time we've seen them on NXT so far. But I really did not take notes of this. I just put a squinching because it wasn't a squash because they just came out and took down Buddy Murphy and Elias Sampson. So I went half a star on this one.
Yeah. Regal was in some sort of mood during this match.
Ooh, yes.
he just kept out with the one-liners. And then he just kept saying the shit that we've been saying for weeks is like, they haven't been challenged. They haven't beaten anybody. Where's the tag team division? So my note says, Regal spitting truth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was good to hear, you know, all of our problems with this team validated.
I love it. I almost want to bump it. I gave it my standard squash rating of a half a star also. And I almost wanted to bump it up like 3/4 because of Regal's commentary, because it was just music to my ears. This is all the things we've been saying. He even buries Too Cool at one point. Yes.
who are they
really beating? Where are the credible opponents for these tag team champions? And they're like, well, you know, on Arrival, they made a good showing, you know, Too Cool. Oh, no, I'm talking about the real competition here at NXT. Where is it?
He said beating Too Cool was like an albino moving to Miami.
Yes. Pointless.
I don't even know.
I thought about that for like a good 10 minutes trying to figure out what he was meant. And I guess he was saying like, beating Too Cool is like beating an albino that moves to Miami, or is like,
I think I figured,
you know, that's how easy it was. Like, I guess the Ascension are Miami in this metaphor or simile.
I read into it as one of the things you do in Miami, you go to the beach, you want to get a tan, right? Mm-hmm. Nice glow in the sun. But if you are an albino, this is probably very offensive. You know, you are incapable of that. Therefore, moving to Miami would be quite pointless. Yes. If you really, you know, can't enjoy the beach. And beating Too Cool is equally pointless in his eyes, because who are Too Cool? They're nobody.
Nobody's pal.
Yeah, Regal, as always, is right. And he agreed with us, so that was great.
Love it.
So building off of that, so the Ascension grabbed the mic at the end and almost addressed this, saying that they've laid waste to all the teams at NXT. And I was like, yeah, all the illustrious teams that they've run over in the last 4 months. Yes, of course. And they say that they want something to destroy. So the newly introduced team of El Locale and Kalisto come and they issue a challenge. I thought El Locale's speech, like his cadence of speaking, was very strange. Like he's like slurring his words together. It was very odd. And then Kalisto does his lucha chant, the lucha, lucha. And he kind of gets the crowd into that. And so this sort of sets us up seemingly. I'm not sure if they officially said for TakeOver, but you can pretty much read between the lines that this is going to be our match for TakeOver. So we haven't had a lot of time to build up Kalisto and El Locale, but at least they are somewhat of an established team that the Ascension are going to have to face. So that's a plus, I guess.
I feel like it could be an interesting matchup in theory, and in my heart of hopefulness that their style of wrestling could prove a problem for Ascension. So we will see that, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, it might help if we'd seen them in more than one match.
Yes. I know, but they were pretty great in that.
Right, right. We'll take what we can get. I'm having a bit of a Mandela effect situation here. Who is El Locale? Because
that's a good
these one. Are not the
he sounded like a white guy trying to have a Mexican guy's accent, but
yeah, and these are not the Lucha Dragons, who include Kalisto, but I don't know. I just had no recollection of him teaming with this El Locale.
Hot off the wire. El Locale is Ricardo Rodriguez, which I feel like when I was
watching
it.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
El Locale is Ricardo Rodriguez, which I feel like it kind of, I want to say it passed in my head, but I was like, I don't want to just assume that it's Ricardo Rodriguez, like, you know, rotund, you know, luchador guy.
Just to be honest with you.
So there we go. It's Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, that doesn't help me at all, but that's fine.
Well, he didn't wrestle. He was just Del Rio's manager, right? I mean, maybe he did some comedy matches or got beat up. But he didn't do any serious wrestling, right?
And he was mostly WWE. the personal ring announcer, of Alberto Del Rio, manager, ring announcer guy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there we go. The mystery is solved. Right, so we head backstage. Sami Zayn is speaking with not our Devin, who we've seen doing the backstage interviews recently, but Veronica, who had a very Maria Menounos energy to me, a very Maria Menounos vibe. So Sammy kind of just gives his standard, I'm not mad, I messed up, I need to redeem myself in this triple threat match. My want for the title is becoming an obsession, kind of just hyping up the triple threat that we're going to see later tonight in the main event. So good. Standard Sammy promo.
Did you guys notice any chemistry between Sammy and Veronica? Seemed like he was.
I feel like he has chemistry. I feel like he kind of flirts with Devin a little bit, low key, too.
I mean, it's not anything gross or anything. It's just like a real, like, flirty vibe.
Natural vibe. Yeah. Vibe that they have. I like that he admitted that he's obsessed with the championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that, like, somebody says to dog him, potentially. But he's like, no, I admit, I am obsessed with winning the NXT Championship. And I really need this win to redeem myself. I don't feel like I'm going to be right if I don't.
Yeah, it's something they've done well in making the title feel important on NXT since we've started. But, yeah.
And to make it not just a stupid cookie-cutter babyface promo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it could easily be that.
Yeah. Flirty Zayn, maybe we should call him. Flirty Zayn.
I like it.
All right. Carrying on, we have Alexa versus Charlotte in the next round. So now I think this would be our semifinal round.
Yes.
So this is, will we file this to like our, wow, what a matchup, early matchup with Alexa versus Charlotte, seeing where their careers would go. Alexa, I don't know if she had the glitter. Did she do the glitter thing when we saw her on the last one? I don't remember, but I definitely noticed it on this one with the throwing the glitter in there. Okay, so the early part of the match is like the main notes I had is like a lot of this was Charlotte like going like stretching her the stretching offense. And I also said that she was, like, shaking the shit out of her. Like, she was doing the stretching offense and just, like, shaking her head violently.
Yeah.
I kind of expected more of a competitive match, honestly, because it seems like they're giving Alexa a little bit of a push. But this is kind of like Charlotte almost dominating her, even though Alexa got a couple spots in. I thought they would give Alexa a little. I didn't think she would win, but I thought she would get a little bit more shine, but she did not. It was a pretty quick match. It was maybe a little bit more competitive than a squash, but it was pretty damn near a squash. I went 1.5 on this one.
Yeah, I would add another offensive style here to our repertoire that we're observing. We've got stretching-based offense. I think we've got party-based offense, gymnastics offense, I think, at times, which Alexa falls a little bit into that category. Mm-hmm. But in this match, she uses a lot of roll-up-based offense.
Yes.
Where she's trying to get these quick pins on Charlotte. I mean, she doesn't look bad. She's sort of holding her own, which is a bit surprising. But they don't get a lot of time. And it's just, I don't know. It continues that trend of you're hoping you see more out of these matches in this women's championship tournament. I mean, so far, I feel like our highlight has been that Sasha Bailey match, which, I mean, I was really I say really high on. I gave it 3 stars. Mm-hmm. You guys were
perhaps a little lower, but I mean, with that's
some were that some would of, even faint at that rating, I would say, Tim.
So might just fall out. But no, I mean, when that's kind of your gold standard, you know, Sasha and Bayley in early 2014, feels like something a little bit wonky here. This is where you hope to see the women's division step up more, and I'm not totally sure we have.
Yeah, and part of me thinks they're kind of protecting him by giving him these shorter matches because they don't want him to go out there. Like Alexa, for sure, I can't imagine is super experienced at this point. So I feel like part of it is probably them trying to protect him. But, I mean, it is what it is, you know. It's whether they have a reason for it or not, it's still not – they're not giving him much to really put anything together.
Yeah, I'm with y'all on most of that. Charlotte does this bent over the knee offense. Like, fucking never seen that shit before, ever. Like, literally never have. I think she should do it more often, but she was, like, choking the shit out of Alexa. Mm-hmm. And I think she gets just as rough with her as Alicia Fox did in the previous round. So, Alexa getting a little bit of a trial by fire here in these matches, even though, I mean, they're not super, like, competitive in any way, but she's kind of getting beat up a little bit. Which, I mean, I guess is part of paying your dues, you know, when you start. I was going to ask you guys about Charlotte here because y'all know how I feel about her, but and I feel like she has a weird chemistry with the crowd, and the crowd is not behind her yet. Like, she doesn't have that connection with them yet. Do you feel like, where does she start to develop that?
I think very soon, because, I mean, she's still this heel character. She's coming off of, what are they called, the BFFs with Summer Rae. And, I mean, they've dropped Summer Rae from that group. It's really just a pairing of her and Sasha. The crowd does get on Sasha quite a bit, which is, I don't know, a little bit surprising that they, you know, single her out, not Charlotte. But it sort of makes sense for the story that they're doing. Like, Charlotte is the queen bee, and Sasha's there to just kind of take her licks, I guess. But maybe the crowd doesn't quite know what to make of Charlotte yet. They don't want to cheer her because she is still doing the mean girl gimmick, but they want to cheer her because, you know, she is the one. I mean, I would say she's already the runaway most talented of this sort of burgeoning women's division. You know, Paige is, well, we'll talk a little bit more about Paige, but effectively Paige is no longer in the picture. I mean, yeah, you've got Natalia, but sort of feels like she's on loan from the main roster. Like, she doesn't feel like an NXT women's division wrestler, really.
No.
Natty. But as far as these, like, homegrown NXT women, you really do look at Charlotte as kind of breaking out from the pack. And yeah, I think throughout this tournament we are seeing that, but the crowd just needs a little something. They need that sort of blowaway match or that extra character touch to get behind her, if in fact that is the direction they're going to take in terms of her character.
Yeah, I think the tournament, I kind of feel it. I'm not really sure what the timeline is on it, but I feel this tournament is building. Like, I feel like they're using it to elevate her a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of nice the way they kind of have the benefit with NXT because there's not the pressure to try and move everything so quickly, that I kind of like the way that they build people here, where it's very rare that they just shoot somebody straight to the top. Because, like, even in what we've been watching, when we first started watching, she was kind of just there. Mm-hmm. And now we can slowly start to see her. So I think with this tournament, I think this could be maybe her breakout at TakeOver coming.
I was thinking that too, like, because I don't know the history here. I don't. So it's, and I'm happy that I feel the way that I'm supposed to feel about Charlotte right now. So I'm curious to see what it looks like going forward.
You know, she also doesn't have a cartoonish gimmick. I'm thinking to some of the other women and women's matches we've seen. Paige had more of that quote-unquote real sports feel to her character and her matches. But, you know, you look at that women's title match at Arrival, and it was Paige and Emma. And, I mean, we've talked at length about how Emma's kind of decent in the ring, but it's really impossible to get invested in a personality like that. I mean, she's just so goofy. And I mean, it goes beyond just being one dimensional. It's kind of no dimensional. It's just this silly character. It's not even really,
as our friend Aaron would say, like, she doesn't act like a human being.
Right. That's a,
our friend Aaron George would say. Said when they don't act like a human being, it's hard to get it, you know, to connect, like you said.
Yeah, and I mean, Alexa is sort of in that category, but maybe does at least make up for it in charisma. But I mean, that might be benefit of hindsight too. I don't know that you're saying that seeing Alexa Bliss for the first time in 2014.
True.
I actually think this. The promo we're about to see is somebody who really walks the line well, somebody that we've really loved so far, that kind of has a little bit of what you might consider of a cartoonish thing, but it's real enough to where it's sort of believable, which is our boy Tyler Breeze, who's in the back doing his selfie promo where he has his phone in front of him, seemingly taking selfies the entire time. He says the champ has to be gorgeous. And then he says both of the challengers are Canadians who lack the DNA to be good looking, which is an amazing line. And he says the difference. Well, I love this line, though, because he kind of gets a little bit more serious. And he says that unlike his two competitors, he's going to do whatever it takes. Like Sammy and Tyson are sort of baby faces. They're not going to cross the line. They will only do things that are respectable. But he is willing to do whatever it takes. And I really thought that was a good way to like set him apart as the heel and get that across. And I just like the way this gets over the contrast between the two sort of more white meat baby face characters and then Tyler Breeze, who is like telling us that he'll do whatever. He'll cheat. It doesn't matter. So I thought it was a good promo.
Yeah, I liked it too.
He also calls Canada a country full of
Michael Sayers.
Now, look,
That's a specific insult.
You know, I kind of feel, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't mind looking at Tyler Breeze, but I've mentioned Tyson Kidd kind of does it for me. So he's maybe the exception that proves the rule, because I don't know that wrestling-wise Canada's represented that well.
Canada's had plenty of beautiful, gorgeous wrestlers. That was more Trump than Bret Hart. Yeah, it was.
Bret the Hitman Trump.
But good promo by Tyler Breeze. I liked it. Maybe he's just saying that Canadians, they can't be gorgeous. And Tyler Breeze has been awesome so far.
Full of Michael Cera's. Well, I've got a family full of feet. every single one of us, all the Hart siblings, we all look like a foot, a different kind of foot.
Different kind. All right, so carrying on, we need to get hyped because Mojo Riley, he's gonna face Aiden English, and then they officially let us know that the tag match is set, the tag title match for TakeOver.
Yes.
So this match, after kind of Aiden works over Mojo for a little bit of time, Mojo hits his two moves of doom, which is like the corner splash, and then a hyperdrive, and then beats Aiden. I was kind of surprised he won so handily like that, because Aiden's been built pretty well. And I think it just hurts the match that, I don't know, Mojo can't really sell, and he really can't do much because he doesn't have much offense. And when he's selling, I find his selling and stuff is not great because he's kind of stiff. So I win a star on this one.
Oh boy. I might have overrated this.
I might have two.
No, see now. Okay. I agree. Like Mojo, I think what he lacks for in like maybe diversity, he makes up for in like explosiveness and like athleticism, because I feel like he's fun to watch. And I mean, yeah, he's not wowing me with his moves and shit, but I mean, he's big and he's quick and he's, you know, he seems to be into it. So I just give him a lot of like leeway, I guess. I guess I'm charmed by his gimmick. So I gave it 2.5 stars.
Okay.
Aiden, we enjoy Aiden a lot. So there's nothing surprising there. I thought they worked pretty well together.
Yeah, I may have underrated. I might be more in the 1.5. One maybe is a little low.
Well, look, I am splitting the difference here. I didn't go as high as Jenny, but I did go 1.75 stars. So I could not give it the ladies 2 star here. I felt like it just didn't get to the, it didn't get out of the bad and into fair range, but it's on the upper echelon of bad, you know, it's flirting with being okay. And largely that is Aiden being able to hold the match together. I think I wrote down, this is the most normal Mojo Rawley match I think we've seen.
Yeah. I think he's improving. That,
yeah. I mean, he gets his shit in there, but it feels like more of a, you know, a actual back and forth match, whereas that story of, as you said, Jenny, Mojo's explosiveness and Aiden's speed and his guile. But I mean, Mojo at the end of the day just doesn't do much for me. I'm sorry. And I don't feel good about Aiden getting crushed like this.
Was the one thing I was like,
and that's just, that's maybe me being a mark, but what can I say? The guy's gotten over with me. Mm-hmm. So I want better things for him.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tim. I forget. I was trying to remember, who did he have that? It was Sheamus, right? Was it that he faced Sheamus and he had that pretty good match a while back, I want to say? He had a good match.
Yes, they talked about how they're competing pale bodies.
Pales,
they
were like, yes.
Yes. Yeah, but that was a good one. Paleness. And like after that one, I was like, man, Aiden, he's going places. And then he comes out here and just kind of gets mushed by Mojo. And I was kind of disappointed. Maybe I was just bitter and that's why I kind of underrated a little bit. Very.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. All right. So we get our final promo for the triple threat, which is Tyson Kidd promo, who he gives a very, very boilerplate babyface promo. Probably the weakest of the three, I would say, because like Tim said, Sammy has a good way of like not crossing that line into cheesy, where I feel like Tyson is skirting that line a little bit more of getting into like almost too generic of a babyface promo. I do like him. Like, I didn't dislike or anything, but it's just nothing to write home about. But I do like the whole concept of these promos being spaced out throughout the show to hype the main event. I like that whole concept. It's fun.
I'll tell you what this promo did, and it is a pretty boilerplate, boring babyface promo, but something that I did appreciate is, number one, he puts the title over, which, I mean, he kind of puts the whole brand over, really, because number two, he sort of clarifies and gives some logic to why he's in NXT, because I think to look at this on the face of it, you're sort of thinking, well, Tyson Kidd, you know, couldn't cut it on the main roster. Now he's demoted to developmental, basically, and here he is slumming it. What's this loser doing here? And he sort of makes it sound like this is, he sells it as a move by choice. Like, he wants to be here because NXT is, you know, the new hotness. This is where you make a name for yourself. And, you know, he's going to, if he can be really visible at a time when NXT is getting itself on the map, then he is all the better for it than he is, you know, working jobber matches on whatever the equivalent of superstars is, you know. Yeah, main event, there we go. I mean, he doesn't say that, but he all but says it. And I kind of appreciated just having that angle touched upon.
I know you like it when you get your angle touched upon
by Tyson Kidd, especially
by Tyson Kidd. He was looking pretty good. I'm kind of a sucker for a promo when they're doing something else while they're talking during the promo, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like, and he was just, yeah,
Little hand off.
Little hand job, yeah.
What are we doing?
Sorry.
He's wrapping the tape. He had the tape. He's wrapping his wrists. You don't want to injure your wrists. Injure your wrists, you know.
You got to pay for that usually.
All right, so moving on from Tyson.
I love it when I make things weird.
Great segue.
I didn't know if Jenny had any additional thoughts on Tyson wrapping himself.
No, I'm good.
All right, so we get a big match of Angelo Dawkins versus Big Cass. And I may have missed this, but I don't know if they called him Big Cass before. They might have, but
yeah,
I think they usually called him Colin Cassidy.
It still says Colin Cassidy when at least on our last the last time we saw Big Cass. See, his graphics said Colin Cassidy, but they were calling him Big Cass, on commentary. So I don't know. Maybe they're easing into it gradually.
Yeah. So this match was a very kind of slow, lumbering squash match that probably took a little bit more time than it should have. And really the whole point of it was so CJ Parker could parade around the arena with his sign that said NXT, but it stood for no extra toxins. I guess he's trying to get under the skin of Big Cass, who is a noted global warming denialist, apparently. The highlight of this was just, for me, was how pissed off Regal got about CJ Parker. He just, at one point, CJ Parker's walking up, Regal just go away, hippie. which is probably the half star I gave this match. I would probably give it to Regal for that line. Just, he's so mad. And it's funny because Regal Regal hasn't really leaned too much one way. I guess he leans heelish a little bit sometimes. So it's just funny that the guy is a heel. He just completely shits like, go away, hippie.
He has his limits, yes. It's like CJ Parker is to William Regal with the NWO or to Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
That's where he just flips it.
Oh, bloody hippie.
Well, I have no recollection of watching this match whatsoever. I'm seeing it in my notes going, there's a Big Cass Angelo Dawkins match. What? Apparently I gave it a star. The extracurricular with CJ Parker and Regal. I mean, I do have a vague recollection of that, so I'm guessing that's why I gave it a star, bumping it up over my standard half star squash rating. But yeah, that's an easy one, I guess.
I'm there with you guys. I didn't overrate this one.
No.
I like seeing Big Cass, and so I didn't totally hate it, but Regal was the savior of this one-star match.
Cool.
And I should note that that Big Cass won with the East River Crossing was his finish. Oh.
I like that finish, actually.
Yeah, the finish was pretty good, but they were just kind of lumbering around the ring a little bit too much for me.
A little bit.
All right, so we're backstage. Bo Dallas speaking with JBL. He has a stack of letters from his Bo Leavers, and he says he deserves another title shot. JBL says that we could take those letters and CJ Parker could recycle them, be environmentally friendly.
Savage!
JBL tells him he'll make a deal with him. If he beats his next opponent, he gets a title shot. But if he loses, he has to leave NXT. Which I thought about this, I was like, in kayfabe, this is kind of a win-win for him, right?
It is.
If you think about the hierarchy of WWE, it's like, so if he wins, he gets a title shot. And if he doesn't, he gets to go, I mean, assuming to the main roster, which is, you know.
If you lose, you get promoted.
Yeah, so it's like pretty good for him. And so he has to fight Big E, will be his opponent. I really love Bo's vacant stare in all this as he's like pondering all this. And I also love that in the end, he accepts this agreement with JBL. And the whole point of him with the letters is he said, you know, if I don't do it, if we don't answer these letters, they're just going to end up in your office anyway. And then he just ends up leaving the letters with JBL, which defeats the entire purpose. They did linger on JBL awkwardly long at the end too. There's like 10 seconds of just JBL, like staring into the abyss. But to me, this kind of telegraph, like, all right, officially Bo's going to be gone for sure.
Yeah, I actually like this segment a lot.
Yeah, it was
like
fun.
His dopey grin and like Bo just being so excited for nothing, and he's like all these letters, and there's like 7 letters there. I don't know. It's such a weird thing with Bo. How much I like his creepiness, but also I kind of don't want to ever see it again.
I'm with you. And again, I think it's that that rictus grin that he does that is it's so good, and it just so suits him.
Yes.
But it's legitimately unsettling.
Yeah, you're just like,
And I enjoyed this segment too, because JBL is making the match with him and Big E as if it's a sort of gotcha, and Bo is ecstatic because he thinks he's got Big E's number. So he's like, oh, this is perfect. Thank you. So it's like, he actually got what he wanted out of this exchange, apparently, and hence the long, awkward linger on JBL. Now left with the stack of mail.
Yes.
Good stuff.
We got the only reason I mentioned the Total Divas promo that came on after this is because it revealed to me that Eva Marie is a recovering alcoholic, which I did not know. Okay. Because they showed, apparently this Total Divas was them going to Mexico or something and doing, I guess, kind of like a spring break sort of deal. And they cut to Eva Marie and she's like, I didn't tell anybody, but I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
And so, fun fact.
I haven't watched any season, but
all they do is drink there on that show.
Tough for Eva Marie.
I've never watched it. I mean, I think it's more of I don't know. Isn't it more of a like Kardashians almost, like an impoverished Kardashians sort of thing?
Yeah.
It's all like that.
Yeah, it's like I think about their interpersonal like dramas and stuff. Like, I think part of it is like they portray them all as being like this big friend group because I guess they're all traveling together and stuff. And then all the little issues that come in, like in this case, wanting to go drinking, and Eva Marie is a recovering alcoholic.
My understanding is women cannot be friends. So
that's not what I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women can't be friends with each other or with dudes because that's weird too. So it's just like we're fucked.
They can't have friends.
Can't have friends at all.
Yeah. Just gotta be uncomfortable all the time.
It's all have personality disorders. It's interesting. Who knew?
All right. Hot main event. Our triple threat for the number one contender spot. Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze versus Tyson Kidd. For once, Regal does not have the scoop on Tyler Breeze's first situation because he says that he asked him, but Tyler Breeze was so focused on the match, he could not figure out the fur. So that was a fun little detail. I like going into this that you could easily see all three of these guys winning, which was a good
dynamic. Me too, yeah.
So that was a good dynamic. We got a lot of hesitation in the first part, kind of all them sort of staring, seeing who's going to start it out. We got a lot of Yoshi chants, like Yoshitatsu chants, which I thought was odd. Not really sure why the crowd was so into Yoshi, but
they were behind him in the Battle Royal too. I think it was one of those like smart crowd ironic chants, so maybe this was like on the same taping and they just had that in their system, you know.
Yeah, I feel like this is the point in these shows where the crowd really, because I think it goes into the next episode too, where the crowd is very the crowd's a little salty, I would say. Yeah, so they kind of go through a lot of this was like your normal sort of triple threat dynamic where one guy kind of gets knocked out, the other two work and sort of go back and forth like that, kind of interchanging. I did think Sammy had some he did have some parts where he was selling, where I put that he had some Gargano-isms, where it was kind of like he had a spot where he was kind of in the corner and he's like staring at his hands. It's sort of like, like I got to, you know, I have to get over this. Like I have to charge up and overcome everything, which I thought was interesting because I know Gargano gets kind of crapped on for that stuff a lot.
Yes, so, his artistry.
Yes. I thought the camera in this match bothered. It's the only time we've been watching these where I felt like the camera like actively became an issue for me. Like I felt like a lot of times when they were going for like a high spot, they would like cut on the impact, which hasn't really been an issue for me. I know it's like an issue with WWE in general, but I haven't really noticed it on these shows, but I noticed it on this one for some reason. And also the crowd was very dead for this one, which I thought was very weird because this is one of the bigger matches we've seen. Three of the biggest stars they have, and the crowd was, I don't know, did y'all notice that? Or is this me? Or I thought they were,
I guess they got picked up towards the end because you get a, I mean, because this, I mean, not to, you know, cards on the table, this match is pretty hot, and that finishing stretch, you get an all three guys chant at one point. It's a little hard to make out, but I was like, oh, okay, I get what they're saying. Like they're into the match and they're into all three of them. So they'd pretty much be good with anybody winning, I guess. But yeah, that's one of those, like, you know, you have something when you get that kind of sort of respectful type chant. So I think this is one of those, it just took them a while to wake up, maybe.
It's a slow burner, I think.
It is, yeah. And this is
they did pick up towards the end. You're right.
And this match gets some time, which is good. I could have used a little bit more time, in fact. But anyway, not to steal the show here, but I got really into this match myself, so it was very effective in drawing me in, and I had no idea who was going to win either, because I just forgot. Who was the challenger going into that first takeover?
Yeah, so the ending is sort of Sammy gets dumped out, and then Tyson Kidd wins with an elbow drop to pin Tyler Breeze, and Sammy is kind of upset, realizing that he kind of lost the shot that he talked about earlier, like he didn't redeem himself. I have a feeling I'm going to be, I don't know, maybe I was just annoyed watching all this because I think I'm going to be low in this too. I really like the idea of this. These are all really good guys and I was hyped for it. I was a little disappointed by it, I guess. They did sort of do the normal triple threat thing, which didn't bother me. It felt a little bit slow and I felt at times they maybe oversold a little bit for what was actually happening. Cause I mean, to their credit, they weren't doing like, you know, big move and like not selling it. But I feel like they were like at times like they were acting like they were kind of dying, and I didn't feel like there was enough really in the match to totally, like, to your point, Tim, maybe if it was a little longer, I could have bought it more. But it's like I felt towards the end they were sort of like acting like they were dying, and I didn't feel like there was really enough had happened in the match to really get over that it had been that exhausting or that brutal.
Sort of a manufactured epic feeling, perhaps.
Yeah, yes, kinda. Sammy does do that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so to me that, and I think they're all
Gargano-ish. That's another one of those dings on him, which, not by me, but by people.
Yeah, which I don't, the thing about that is, like, normally he has these epic, but they really are, like, long-ass matches.
Yeah, they are.
Where these was, like, you know, I just didn't buy it. It didn't seem like it was the epic they were trying to tell, but it was still good. They still hit good spots. They're all super talented. I guess it was more a matter of my expectations going in. Like, I thought this would be like a sort of a hidden gem for me, and instead it was just kind of like a pretty good match for me, which was a little disappointing. It just never like escalated like I want, I guess. But I went 2.5. I'm interested to see where y'all are. Maybe. Am I underrating this? Tell me.
I went 3 on it.
Okay.
Tim, I need you to rate the sharpshooter. I think it was Tyson got it. Yeah, because he's Canadian.
What do we rate?
By marriage or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give him a solid. I think I'd give him an 8 out of 10. I thought this was pretty solid sharpshooter.
I was kind of hoping that you would, because I thought it looked pretty good. Kind of unexpectedly, I don't know why, but I guess I just don't. I'm not clicked in with Tyson Kidd yet. I did not enjoy him pinning Tyler at all. I was not happy about that. But I was happy with Sammy being too close to knock him off and save the match. I have a feeling that's going to be perpetually what we see in Sammy is being a little too late on all his matches. But it's good. Like, it gives him a place to go. So that's why I didn't hate it. 3 stars, Tim.
I went 3 stars also. So I guess Jake underrating it a little bit, but I don't think it's egregious. You know, say 2.5, especially if you did have much higher expectations, which you see this match on paper and the three participants, you might want a bit more from it. I can see those points about kind of the manufactured drama and just, it is a bit paint by numbers, the triple threat of it all, right? Where it's one guy goes out, now we go. Now he gets back in, and one other guy goes out, and it's, you know, that type of thing that you just kind of get, it wears thin very quickly in this type of match. And that's the conventional ding on any triple threat. And they didn't do much to get away from it. But, I mean, in the body of the match, we do see some hashtag sweet moves, right?
And a favorite line of mine, Regal admits that when he was in triple threat matches, he would play possum and go and hide and let the other guys beat on each other. Yeah. So I loved that.
Mm-hmm. In which we don't really see here. Everybody's, you know, it's very taken very seriously. They're all serious athletes. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to take a powder or anything, which, I mean, makes sense for these characters. But I enjoyed the finish quite a bit with Sammy. You know, it feels like a victory being snatched from, or defeat really being snatched from the jaws of victory, where he hits his finish on Tyler, but gets dumped, and Tyson really steals the win. So again, we're seeing Tyson Kidd as this kind of dark horse, where he's picked up these wins. He looked impressive in that battle royal, and now he finds himself number one contender. Where did this come from?
Out of nowhere.
I feel like your feelings, Jenny, is sort of what they're going for. Like, you're not necessarily meant to be totally behind him, because it's like, yeah, he's a decent wrestler, and you're going to get good matches out of him, but Tyson Kidd, really?
Yeah.
You know?
It feels like we're kind of saving Sammy for something else. I don't know. Because he's just too good to, like, not be in this title picture.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which I kind of enjoy. I kind of like that they're doing that. It's something that I think you miss in a lot of modern wrestling, because it's so hard for them to delay anything, because it's so, everything moves at such a, like, a lightning pace, that they're always trying to go to the next thing. It's like, a lot of times they don't feel, at least, like they can do something like this, where even though probably Sammy is your most over guy and the guy everybody wants to see, you just kind of hold it because you know you can keep building him and make it even bigger when he does.
So edge it out is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
We're edging Sammy out. Gotcha. Yes,
I like it. you know, ration it basically is the way it works. Is, I get what you're saying, Jake, and I appreciate that too, where you don't have your most over guy necessarily in the main event all the time, like challenging or as the champion, even like have somebody else carry the title, sort of be that standard bearer who is still over, even if they are not the most over. I sort of think back to the Aleister Black days as NXT champion. Like, he wasn't the most over guy on that roster, but he was so legit in that role. His matches were super sick, and it was just a perfect role for him, where you had that as sort of your main events, but you had, you know, the Gargano Ciampa situation, which was super hot. It's just a nice way of spreading the wealth, where you don't pair like your two most over dudes against each other, and the rest of the card kind of, you know, suffers for it. Mm-hmm. So I like that approach too. I am definitely a mark for it. And that does beg the question, though, where does this leave Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze? Well, I guess we'll find out soon.
Yes, we will. So that wraps up this episode. I definitely like this one a bit more than the last one. So I went 5 out of 10 on this one because even though maybe the triple threat was a little disappointing to me, it was still a pretty hot angle, like with all these guys going up ahead, and they really built it well. I'm always love whenever they have something you're waiting for at the end of the episode and they keep building it, like how they had each guy give a little promo leading up to it. Mm-hmm. I always love that kind of stuff. So I thought this was a good one. I went 5 out of 10.
I'm higher than that. I really liked the main event there, and you know, I was higher on that Mojo match than you guys were, but I went 6.5 out of 10.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to go. I'm going to go higher than you, Jenny. I'm going to go. What? Yes. Do I want to give it 7?
I think you might.
I'm not going to give it 7. 7's getting into like best TV, like a best TV show ever type territory to me.
Is it?
Yeah, because once you get into like 8s and 9s, that's, you know, that's takeovers.
Yeah, unless, I would think like if
unless
they come
you're
out...
using different grading scales for TV and takeover, which is entirely valid. So I don't know. I'm trying to keep it all on the same scale. So I'm gonna go 6.75.
I didn't know we could do quarters on the scale.
I'm doing it. I'm not giving
he
it
does
a 7.
What he wants.
I do as I want.
Math.
I'll do what I. I'm not going to give it a 7. Just I don't think it's all that right. good of a show, but it's. I mean, it's up there. It gives me what I want. It builds off of the last show, which I thought was perfectly solid, and we do actually have a hot match. So, yeah, not really much to complain about here. Mm-hmm. So I'm comfortable with my wonky rating.
I like it.
Yeah, I feel like. To get into the like 7+, if they would have come out in a triple threat and like really tore it down,
mm-hmm.
that's when I think you're getting into like maybe 7+ territory. But all right, speaking of tearing it down, we have a lot of stuff tearing it down. I started thinking of the Seth Rollins another thing amazing. While I was saying that. Tear it down! On Place to Be Nation podcast. Network tearing it down. On the newest episode of the main event, Scott, Nate, and Steve dive into their mailbag and answer your questions. Our great and loyal listeners ask about dream matches and AEW fans. Guess who that question was directed at? On the newest drive through the highway to the Impact Zone. Hey, I'm on that. Logan and the guys, I'm on the guys. Look at the 4th episode of Impact in weekly pay-per-view number 101. So, Tim, I know you've recently... subscribe to the Impact Plus, or at least had the free trial, so you can dive into the wonderful world of TNA.
Yeah, I was very intoxicated when I signed up, which is probably the only way to sign up for that service.
And watch it.
and consume the service.
And do podcasts about the show.
You can consume other things, yes. Your entire... Look, people, your entire TNA experience... should not be one that you remember at any cost.
Yeah, vague memories.
Very vague. Like a Big Cass versus Angelo Dawkins match, I tell
exactly.
you. I wonder what percentage of subscribers to Impact Plus were sober when they entered into this agreement. I, in fact, did the 1 year, the annual.
Oh, geez.
Wow. Committed.
Which sounds awfully confident, doesn't it? Look, TNA has been around. It will. The show's called dies. TNA Will Never Die, right? One of the shows at Jenny, your show,
yes.
TNA Will Never Dies. So perhaps this will be the year that it dies because I got an annual subscription to Impact Plus.
Love it.
So if it dies, you can blame me. I killed it.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to watch D'Lo Brown wrestle in Year of Our Lord 2004? Drew Wardlaw is a special guest on the newest You Don't Know Billy Jack. His wife, Mr. and Mrs. Wardlaw, take a look at the famous barbed wire ECW title match between Sabu and Terry Funk. For episode number 50, wow, row one, seat one, Ben, our good buddy Ben Zanny, celebrates his 50th episode by welcoming independent wrestler Thomas Shire onto the show to talk, among other things, about his training with Dory Funk Jr. A lot of funks on the feed right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of funk talk.
It's a funk feed.
Yes, it is. On the newest episode of Senior Video, Rory and Ben Lake go through villains of the squared circle. Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed also.
I believe it's called Watch the Video with Rory.
Watch your... I believe it's called Senior Video.
Senior Video.
Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, which I was on recently, discussing Beverly Hills Cop, and also the Sly Stallone movie Cobra. Subscribe today.
That's such a good movie.
I
mean, it's not, like, but it's...
No. But even, and when you talk about, like, I was feeling like the first 40 minutes. Like, the first 40 minutes were, like, so absurd, crazy, like, cult movie-ish. And then once they got a little bit too romantic, I kind of...
It's true. There is a bullshit love interest thing that they did not need to do in that movie.
I wish I would have just stuck to, like, the crazy, like, nihilist serial killer cult. Like, and really just...
Went, yeah, yeah.
But it was a fun one.
I feel that's what really separates Sly Stallone and Arnold. Arnold didn't fuck around with that romantic interest, subplot bullshit in his movies. But I feel like Sly felt like he had to put it out there. I don't know.
He's an emotional man.
Yeah, he had to.
While you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First, Jennifer Smith, our very own, The Jenny Position, is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. Is there any specific episodes recently, Jen, that you want to highlight?
Yeah, there was an episode of Talk and Pop where me and Tim there, we reviewed and solved all the mysteries on Unsolved Mysteries, the new reboot that they've got on Netflix. So
six mysteries, six closed cases.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic show.
It really was good. It was like, I told y'all, it was like if y'all had a true crime podcast.
Yes.
That episode of Talking Pop was like Jen and Tim true crime.
Oh, man. I think it's probably the most serious we've been.
Like, I was about to say that. I was going to say, and I didn't want y'all to take it the wrong way, but yeah, it was.
Hey, this episode is actually good.
The hypothetical listener will be.
The hypothetical listener will be pleased for the first time.
Yes. Also, check out the new North-South Connection brought to you by JT Zero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home of Wrestling Warzone, The Holds Bar, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, The Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, which that's me, TNA Never Dies, Jen's on that one. And also, there are some new podcasts coming, I think, pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Or what have it. So, we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, Terming the Greatest WCW Match Ever. You have till New Year's Eve to do your research, pro matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches on the pro wrestling or on the pro wrestling only message board on our social media pages. The greatest song from a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites every day. Be sure to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices, fresh takes, bringing articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And if you're doing online shopping from Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. Takes you right to the Amazon page and helps us out with no cost to you. Take some money out of Bezos's pocket and give it to us.
So that's right.
So that'll do it. So we will now dive into the Go Home episode of NXT. The Go Home for the first ever NXT TakeOver, May 22nd to 2014. And we start off with the four hyped Bo versus Big E match, which essentially is a loser leaves town match, because if Bo loses, he will be out of NXT and get promoted to the main roster and seemingly make more money and be exposed to more fans. And so it's a real big punishment. on commentary, I think Renee compared him to Tim Tebow.
Which, yes. She buried him.
Big time.
Yeah, she buried him and Tebow.
Yes. She's like, I hate Tim Tebow. Well,
damn, this, Renee. Yeah, so we are back to the Renee team, and she is back on her bullshit on this episode, too. Coming out hot. With, compare him to Tebow. Bo says he cuts kind of a little pre-match promo saying that he is Mr. NXT, and I will never leave you, he tells the crowd. Yeah. So the crowd, the dynamic with him and the crowd through this whole ordeal is really awesome. Like,
great.
It kind of reminds me of the Kurt Angle, like how the crowd would treat him like a heel, almost out of respect. Yeah, uh-huh. It kind of has that vibe going, because they're singing the Bray Wyatt whole world in his hands thing to troll him. So the first part was kind of a little bit too slow for me. They were kind of sort of walking around the ring. Big E would hit him a few times. Bo would do his normal stalling thing and try and run away. But I really thought they'd ramped it up pretty well towards the end when Big E started really busting out some more like dynamic offense. Like he hit the belly to belly, which like was really nice. He really launched Bo on that one. And I thought they did a good job more in the end of getting over the stakes of the match. Like Bo, if he loses, that he's going to be out of NXT, to make it feel a little bit more worth it. Because at the beginning, it didn't quite have any, like, it didn't feel like the way they were going about the match really had the intensity. But they really picked up towards the end. I was surprised that Big E kicked out of the double. I guess not surprised, I expected Bo to lose. But Big E did kick out of the double arm DDT, which was sort of surprising, because that's like kind of Bo's finisher. Poor Rich Brennan on commentary is trying to get excited as the match heat up towards the end, but he sounded pretty bad. I feel bad saying that, but I feel like he was trying, but he sounded like impoverished Michael Cole.
Impoverished Andy Atherton.
So we'll get... At the end, so he eats the big ending. Bo eats the big ending, and he is gone and gets pinned by Big E. So I gave this 2.25 because I thought they kind of saved it towards the end. I like the ending of this.
I think that I haven't watched Big E wrestle in quite a while because I can't do wrestling right now with no crowds. So I forgot how ginormous he is and how quick he is and how fucking brutal he is. Like, he just beats the shit out of Bo. And it's great. Like, he's just getting destroyed. And it's like so funny because we haven't seen Big E on this show, and it's like, okay, come over here and beat the shit out of Bo so you can leave it to me. Yeah. That little jumping, he literally jumped over Bo. That was amazing. And I mean, I know these things about Big E. I just have not seen this in a bit. So I was quite taken with it. And I gave it 2.75 stars, Tim.
Okay. I went 2.5, actually. Look at that, splitting the difference. It's so funny how this works out. I felt much like Jake that this was, if I can be nerdy for a moment, a bit perfunctory. Mm-hmm. Like, it is sort of, they're like, nobody's really gaining an advantage, and it feels like they're stalling and trying to kill time a little bit in those early goings of the match. But yeah, it did pick up nicely, and I like that finish. It is a bit odd that they had Big E kill Bo's finisher like that, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, that's something you do to a guy when you're like never going to see him again. Mm-hmm. When he's like actually retiring, not just moving to a different show. So it's kind of that weird territory mentality in a way. But I don't hate it. And I feel like we've been taking bets on when is Bo going to be done in NXT, mm-hmm. Like for a while. And we do here get a proper send-off for him. Mm-hmm. A little bit unceremonious. I mean, he gets his shit pushed in by Big E.
Yes.
But, I mean, they actually do write him off the show. So, I think I bumped it a bit, too, for the post-match.
Yes.
Just meltdown.
Oh, my God.
Because that, I mean, it's expected, but really does deliver. And I mean, Big E is always a joy to watch, but he's here to basically take care of business. Like, it's not like he's going to be sticking around in NXT. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of dispatched Bo. I guess, did Bo win the title off of Big E?
I believe that's what they said.
Yeah. So I mean, it is a nice little callback to some history, even though we haven't explored it, that just having that sense of continuity is appreciated.
Yeah, at least gives it something, you know, because I think on the surface you would see this matchup and be like, okay, they just randomly pick Big E to come here and
kick
his ass. But it does, they did do a good job of making it seem like there is some history here between them. So let's get into the post-match, like Tim mentioned. So Bo is weeping. I put these weeping and spitting. He's like blubbering all over, like spits flying around. He goes, don't leave me. And then there's this wonderful moment where he kicks the steps and hurts his knee and just completely falls on the ground, just grabbing his knee. The crowd is, if they came up with this on their own, good for them. But so they're chanting Bo leave at him because
leave.
I love that he, the way it escalates, because at first he's kind of like, don't leave me, I'm going to miss all of you. And they just keep on like antagonizing him. And so when he finally makes it back up the ramp, he tells them that he strongly dislikes them and that something he usually would never tell anyone, but you people stink. And the crowd just laughs at him. So I thought
y'all should have just believed.
Yeah, should have believed.
I mean, it was fantastic. Like, I don't know what about it works for me, but it just does. He's perfect for that.
It also pays off the
feelings a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It touched a little bit on some of my issues. So I felt bad for old Bo, but he did a great job.
I mean, it pays off his entire character, too, mm-hmm. with this facade that he wears, this false sincerity, where it's played for comedy, but it is quite authentic, him telling the crowd that he strongly dislikes all of them. Like, from somebody like Kurt Angle, you would laugh at that, right? But from him, it's like, oh, this is such a damning admission. It goes against his entire aesthetic, the whole believe. I think Renee called him a walking self-help book at one point.
Yes.
And just is a smack in the face, really, for him to exit in this manner, but is really effective. So, great stuff here. And Bo will be missed. I mean, he kind of does need to move on. So this was really kind of the best way to go about it. I don't know that he needs to be in the main event mix anymore. It's not like he needs another title shot or anything. So this being just the opener feels a bit exhibition-y, but they put some stakes to it and they've got history here. So it all just really clicks for me.
Yeah, I feel like maybe we should talk since it's one of our... I guess we had Paige, like, was a major departure, but we really didn't see her a bunch. Like, we kind of only caught the tail end where we've seen a lot of Bo. Mm-hmm. Maybe quickly. So Bo would really not go on to do a whole lot on the main roster. He would kind of become...
Shocking.
Yes. Which, I mean, he was a world champion in NXT. I wouldn't expect him to be a main roster world champion, but I do think his character... It at least seems like it could be a really solid, like, mid-card heel kind of act. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sadly, he really didn't do much of anything. He kind of
it's a shame because he's so well liked by the crowd, but at the same time, as you said, Jake, they are willing to play along mm-hmm. with his heel character. It's not that shitty, snarky, like you're a heel.
Cool heel. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have a personality, we're going to cheer you anyway. Like they're totally willing to go along with it because they like him and just admire his abilities as a character. And I don't know what you give him on the main roster, if it's something enormously different, like a major departure from this Believe gimmick, but it just seems like he's good enough, like as an actor, that mm-hmm. he could have gotten something over.
Well, there's not much room for nuance on the main roster, so.
You're right. They just didn't even try with him, I don't think.
Yeah. It sucks, but it won't be the first time. I mean, it won't be the last time.
It will be the first time.
Yes, it is literally the first time. Literally the first time.
It'll be the first time. Many.
All right, we get a Tyson Kidd promo, and he says the title is the reason he's here. Not much of note. Just kinda.
This may be the promo I was actually complimenting in our last episode, where he talks about the title and putting it over. So not that it really matters.
But was he taping himself?
I don't know, man. Like I say, you usually got to pay extra for that. So maybe not 2 weeks in a row.
So right after this, we get a Sammy interview where he says he's not going to let the loss slow him down. And Tyler Breeze accosts him, chastises him for losing. And he says, Sammy tells him that they could fight tonight, but Breeze tells him that he's busy, that he's going to a ball, which is funny.
Yes.
He's going to a ball. So they set the match up for TakeOver. And I was pretty excited for this. This is a good way to find something for it. Kind of really pays off the triple threat because now we have two pretty good matches built from that triple threat. So I have no complaints about this. You know, it's not like they've really had a ton of build to it, but I think it's enough to mm-hmm. work as, you know, it's not a main event or anything as a to fill out the card for TakeOver. So, yeah.
Yeah. Breeze and Sammy, they have some issues, not super heated issues, but hey, let's make some matches for TakeOver. This is our last opportunity to do so. So, if we get a good match out of it, then go for it. Put it down. Book it.
Yep. No complaints from me. I'm hyped for it. Stay hype. All right. So, I was our next match apparently is, and the first thing I put in my notes that Tim was going to be so angry at this.
So angry.
Because Paige, who we were told had to be stripped of the title because there would be no way she could travel the world defending the Divas title and come to NXT and defend the NXT title. But she is here to face Tamina Snuka. So she gets a huge reaction too. Like the crowd is super mm-hmm. into her. So Tim, tell me, how angry were you, or were you angry?
Yeah, I hated this on multiple levels. and the first of those is it is yet again a Paige match with no reason for existing. Why did we strip her of the title if she's still going to be working shows? And if we did strip her of the title, why is she working shows? It's just, what are we doing? The other dimension that I hate this on is it does absolutely nothing to build TakeOver. This is our go-home show before mm-hmm. not just any TakeOver, but their first TakeOver, a pretty major event. I mean, I know we did Arrival, but if this was just thrown out here on any random NXT television show, like, it'd be like, whatever, who cares? Mm-hmm. But it is just such, it is especially a waste of time on this one. Of all shows, you're building TakeOver. This has nothing to do with TakeOver. Paige has no interest in NXT at this point. And to me, who is Tamina, right? I mean, we have never seen her in NXT. It's not like she's this celebrated main roster star who is going to make this huge impact that everybody's going to be thrilled or surprised or excited to see. And she's just having this like exhibition match against the former champion. I even if it had been a good match, I still would have had all these issues. And surprise, it's not a good match.
Yeah. Any... Were they feuding on the main roster?
Yeah, they... I'm not sure if they were like completely feuding, but they did show some quick little like promo or video package thing. Show something had happened between them, mm-hmm. but it just was preposterous because why would they come? Why did they come to NXT? Neither one of them is in NXT.
Yeah.
Why did they need to come to NXT to do this? Yeah.
What a treat for this NXT audience to see this feud that no one cares about on the main roster. Even
see that I will say for NXT. I like the match okay, mainly because of Paige. I thought, I don't know, I've really been impressed with Paige.
Me
in
too.
The little that we've seen. Like, I thought she was awesome in this match. Like, her bumping, she sells really well. I like her grittiness when she's on offense. Like, she seems to lay everything in really well. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of, like, I remember her being good, but I've really been impressed with her looking back on it. And she takes a bump on the hardest part of the ring.
That was triggering.
Yeah. So yeah. I actually thought this was a pretty decent kind of big. It sounds fucked up, but I put big little match.
yes.
But I thought mainly because of Paige, kind of, you know, she kind of carried this match for me, and it's just, yeah. So it was just, I was conflicted because I kind of liked the match in a vacuum. I thought it was a pretty good match, but yeah, I don't really. The reason for it was kind of ridiculous. So I went 2.25 on the match because I liked it okay. But yeah, it's a weird spot. Like, why is it here? Sort of.
Well, I dinged an entire star rating. I mentioned because I gave it 1.25.
Okay, I gave it 1.75. So.
Okay. You split the difference this time.
Yeah, a little bit.
Which Paige did win. She gets a roll-up. Tamina goes for, I guess it was supposed to be a splash, even though she jumps completely vertically. Like, she makes no attempt to. I think some people call that the flying nothing.
When the you flying go for, nothing. Goes for the nothing off the top.
Yeah, you go for something off the top, but you're clearly just trying to eat the boot. So. And she gets rolled up. But
one cool move that Tamina did where she kind of sat Paige up on the top rope and then kind of paused for a second and then just pushed her ass right off the top rope and she fell all the way to the floor.
Yeah, like Paige was she was bumping her ass off for Tamina. But all right, so let's carry on. This next match too was kind of weird for me. So we get Camacho versus Adam Rose, which when I first saw this, I was like, I definitely thought they would save this for TakeOver, which it is going to end up being on TakeOver also. But then it's on here too, so it was very weird. Renee says on commentary at one point something. She says she loves Tootsie Rolls. I don't remember why she said that. And she also said about Camacho that you don't make a name for yourself beating up Captain Comic, who I did look it up, is Jody Christofferson.
Oh, so, okay.
Just to make sure we clear that up since I had her earlier.
We'll get Jody letters.
We'll get letters.
Leave him in JBL's office.
Yeah, so we get some Adam Rose does his rose petal, as it were, for a distraction where he goes in the ropes and almost does kind of like a starts bicycle kicking the air. Renee says that Rose is tired from all his partying, so that may be one of the reasons why he's not dominating this match. She also says that Chuck Norris is from the Bahamas. And at this point, I was like, is she drunk? She sounded drunk.
Pulling a Bobby.
And so, they just kind of do basic. Camacho gets some basic offense. Adam Rose starts getting the comeback. And then Camacho just sort of bails out and just lets himself get counted out. So I did not really understand the point of this match. The feud is already set. Like, we know they're, you know, we had the very, very heart-wrenching angle where Captain Comic got assaulted. That enough is enough to sell tickets. I don't think we needed them fighting on the show right before the TakeOver. Just save it, put something else right here, kill 5 minutes doing something else. But as a match, I went 1.25.
Oh my god, this is one of those matches where I'm like, what, why am I watching this? Like, what am I doing with my life? Why is this occurring?
Don't you like Adam Rose?
I did like Adam Rose, but everything since the Captain comic is just, I mean, even that was just, I don't know. I'm just totally went cold.
Adam Rose. Oh, man.
And it just,
I'm back on the rosebuds.
I don't know what it was. It's just, I'm like, no, this is nonsense. We gotta stop. Hashtag lame dud hate.
Wow.
Turned heel on Adam Rose.
I did. I don't know.
You just had like an epiphany. You're like, wait, why do I like this?
What am I doing with this?
I think I lost all respect for him when he made Captain Comic get in the ring and get his ass beat.
Okay.
And so now I'm just like, I'm done with you. You don't deserve the rosebuds, sir.
Hiding behind his entourage.
Yeah, then he comes out there and fucking count out? What the shit? Mm. That's so stupid.
Led his lamb to the slaughter.
God.
Poor Captain Comic.
Yeah, this was lame. I did not give it a dud. I gave it a star and a half. I gave it a star and a half because it is an actual story. Like, this is so stupid, like this epic TV feud we've been following between Camacho and Adam Rose, but it's something. They've kind of put some heat on Camacho, surprisingly enough, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but I am somehow even marginally invested in like seeing Camacho get his after the devious acts that he has perpetrated against the Rosebuds. I'm with Kate now that it is just too heinous, and I want to see him go down. We see some not party-based offense, but party-based defense from Adam Rose. The bicycle kicks and the ropes. He's too hungover and tired to compete here. I understand. Maybe he's doing some weed lollipops. Maybe this is the weed
gummies.
Perhaps Side that's cookies. Yeah. The kinship that Renee feels with him. And I did take note of Camacho does a pretty decent job of actually working the crowd, and it's such a small thing, but I feel it's something that heels really don't do when they should, or that they just do it in very generic ways. Like as soon as they start getting on him, like he seizes on it and is like, yeah, it kind of gives it back to him. Mm. So I don't know. I gave him minor points for that. And I think there were definitely better ways of getting to the match at TakeOver than, which I would hope is going to be the blow off to this thing, than having this match here and then end it in a count out. That's pretty stupid. Like you could get there, like have it. You could even do a double count out where they brawl into the back or something. That's at least better than Camacho standing there looking like an idiot as he deliberately gets counted out. I mean, why does he stand? Why doesn't he just walk straight to the back? He stands there and basically looks as dumb as possible.
Mind games.
Sure. With Adam Rose.
I can't get over it. Jenny's like, this guy rolls around the ball. How can y'all like him? Just complete 180. Like me and Tim have been trying to like come around him, and Jen's like, wait, that guy, y'all like him?
What a reversal of fortune.
I'll stand by it. Anybody who puts Braun Strowman into like a gladiator's outfit and makes him dance around like an idiot. I mean, that's fucking Becky Lynch out there in one of his rosebuds. I feel like she's not safe.
She's not safe.
It's a rough crowd.
He's not caring for his rosebuds.
It'd be funny if they turn heel and that was like the thing. It was like this.
I hope they do.
All right. So we have the semifinal for the women's tournament to see who is going to face Charlotte at TakeOver for the women's championship. We get a pre-match Charlotte promo where she says if she has to face Sasha, She'll expose her weaknesses. So they're continuing to sow the seeds of kind of dissension. And they have really hyped, almost, you would think, maybe even telegraphed, that this is going to be Sasha and Charlotte yeah. that are going to face each other in the final of this tournament. At one point on commentary, Rich says, "What do y'all think about her calling out her BFF friend?" which would mean best friends forever friends. And they, what do y'all think about her calling her BFF friend? Some nasty words. And Renee says, "I'm sorry." It's because she cannot understand. So
I'm enjoying this picture you're painting of Renee having to watch and do commentary for like 5 hours worth of NXT tapings and just getting so anxious and just coping with that by getting completely shithoused.
But it's like also getting
to the end of this.
Rich says this like incoherent thing. She's like, "I'm sorry, what?" Like,
she's just gone.
You're supposed to have your partner's back, and she just totally yeah. leaves them out to dry.
Like, "I'm sorry, what?" So we've talked
about to try that on a podcast.
I was just going to say that happens to me all the time on podcasts.
weird contrasts with the tournament. Like, we've talked about it early in the show, but like the tournament thing, but then they're still pushing the Mean Girl stuff. So it's like a weird sort of contrast between this like athletic, you know, women's tournament for the title, but then they're really all about the Mean Girl stuff. I feel like they've been like shying away from, but this match they really laid into it, I guess, because mm-hmm. they're trying to push the Charlotte and Sasha stuff. Because mm-hmm. Renee goes back to some of her, you know, girls are like this. I've been in the locker room. They're, mm-hmm. you know,
they don't really like each other. They'll yeah. do anything.
They're all fake. Yeah,
they're all fake.
But it was a very back and forth match until, so we get a spot where Sasha gets thrown out and she's maybe in danger of getting counted out. And Charlotte is kind of torn as to whether or not to throw her back in. She ends up doing it, but then Sasha loses in the sharpshooter from Natty, which is kind of a swerve because they've definitely really, really tried to make us think that this was going to be this, you know, reluctant showdown between the two BFF friends. And, it is not. So now we actually have Natty versus Charlotte for the title at TakeOver. As a match, I thought this was an okay match. Nothing really to write home about, but nothing like terrible. So I went 2 stars.
All right. I gave it 2.25 stars. Last time we saw Natty, I really liked her. I think this was about on par with what she did last time we saw her. Just kind of doing her thing. I thought she looked really sexy, though. She was wearing this, like, bustier-type top thing and in all pink and her little heart-shaped cutouts. But I thought she looked really good, like, in a thick, Natty way, you know? Sasha is just Sasha. But, yeah, I was kind of swerved. I was sure we were headed towards some Sasha Charlotte stuff, but actually I'm kind of glad we're not. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I'll say in terms of the match quality, this was probably victim of expectations for me. I wanted something more out of this, especially after that Sasha Bailey match, which, you know, is apparently my 2014 match of the year. keep going back to. But I mean, you think of Natalya is being quite a few steps ahead of Bailey at this point. Mm-hmm. And Sasha's sort of getting it together, but they don't do much here. And mm-hmm. match didn't do much for me. A lot of angle advancement, and I'm good with that. I like having our finger on the trigger of Sasha and Charlotte blowing up, but not quite pulling it yet. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty cool with that, because let's get them into more prominent roles maybe, and then go through with it. So yeah, I don't need their implosion to occur in this tournament final, which we talked about the tournament being somewhat subpar. So yeah, mm-hmm. just keep that one in the chamber. So yeah, I went a star and 3/4. If not, then that is my rating.
Sure. You know, you think the first TakeOver, pretty heavy on the Hart family. We have Tyson in the NXT title match and Natty in the women's title match. Somebody in the Foot family is pulling some strings.
Well, you know, they should have called us the Foot Clan, really.
They called up Vince. They said, you want to make up for the screw job? I don't even remember. Like, what's Tyson, his nephew? Like, give my nephew a shot.
Nephew's friend.
Friend of the family. Like family. Far too good looking to be in the family.
Yeah. He doesn't have that foot shape.
Doesn't have the DNA. So they kind of hyped the card here, which I didn't. This one, I feel like the card kind of snuck up on me a little bit more than Arrival, because I felt like Arrival, I kind of saw all the matches and saw how they built. Where this one, it's like I feel like they sort of snuck up on me, but they put together a little card here. We have some decently built matches, the two title matches, and then we get the nice little Sami Zayn, Tyler Breeze. We get the hot angle with Camacho and
setting the world on fire.
Adam Rose. So we have a little card that has come together. So our main event is a non-title match with our champion, Adrian Neville, who we have not really seen in action on this set of episodes yet. Non-title match against Curt Hawkins. Curt Hawkins?
Who?
I'm sorry, what? So this is kind of like I said this was a semi-competitive match just to make Neville look strong before the big show. Not quite a complete squash, but pretty much what we see when they kind of throw Neville in there with a guy and let him look like a beast. I did have a note that Rich said at one point somebody got hit in the back of the head, and he said the back of the head is the softest part of the body. Which,
I think that's true.
Yes, I don't think so either. I feel like there's some other parts that
more delicate.
Yes, but Neville wins with the red arrow. I went a star and a half on this one.
I gave it 2 stars. It just felt like kind of the definition of a 2-star match. Exists just to give your champion a showcase, which is always a good idea before heading into a major title defense on a, can't call it a pay-per-view, but I guess a supercard and takeover. This is not a title defense here, mercifully. Like, they're not trying to fool anyone that Curt Hawkins deserves a title match or is going to win this match. So, yeah, it gets out of there pretty quick, which puts Adrian over strong. That red arrow, man, that's always worth at least a star. So, sort of makes up for where it might be lacking in other respects, because Curt Hawkins, I'm sorry, what?
Who?
Curt Hawkins?
Shows I'm a saber, folks.
I really enjoy Neville. You ever write something in your notes and you're like, God, what a fucking idiot you are?
Not me.
Well, now you have to read.
Only gems here.
It's so stupid because I like asked myself a question and then I answered it in my notes and all of it was dumb. Like, what are you doing?
I would like you to read it verbatim.
What is in Neville's mouth as he's walking to the ring?
Oh.
And it's like, oh, the guard. It's like the mouth guard. He had so
This was a possible question to answer. I thought it was going to be a bit more, I don't know, esoteric perhaps.
No, it's like a literal, like, what is that? Because I couldn't figure it out. And then when he took it out and then he slipped it back, like, over his teeth, I was like, oh, damn.
Took it out and slipped it back in.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, for that, too.
It was a really fun Neville match. I enjoy him a lot, and I enjoy that beautiful red arrow quite a bit. So I did 2.5 for that.
Oh. Wow.
So after the match, Tyson Kidd comes out to say that the belt is going to be his. He does a thing where he keeps saying things like, I'm going to win the belt. And I could not tell what he was saying at first. So he's saying fact, right? Fact.
Yeah.
Okay. Because at first I was like, is he saying bat? Like, what is he saying? And then I was like, okay, fact. So it's kind of a weird thing there. But
usually when you say that, don't you say fact and then make your statement and then say fact and then make your statement again?
Maybe it's a Canada thing.
He did it backwards. Yeah,
it's a Canadian thing.
Yeah. They're watched Degrassi. That's how they...
Right. His nickname would be Fats.
But Neville responds to him and says, as usual, his wife will be the only one bringing the gold. So, like, to Jenny's point earlier, like, he's kind of has that humor to him, Neville. He throws in these little sly jokes to kind of... So they do kind of give us a little bit of... a little bit of heat there besides them just being sort of two baby faces that are going to have a pure athletic, you know, title sort of match. Neville throws in the little dig at the end. They give him a little bit of maybe a personal issue. So that was nice. Good little interaction and stare down as we go out of here and get ready for TakeOver.
Yeah, man. Good stuff.
Hyped.
Yep. Stay hype. So I thought this episode was pretty solid. I gave it a 5 out of 10 as well, even though I thought we got some good developments going into TakeOver, some good matches, even if some of them, like the reason they were there, like the Paige match was kind of baffling as to what purpose it had. I did enjoy seeing Paige because she's really talented in this era. So and the Bo stuff was really awesome too. Mm-hmm. So that definitely added to the show for me. So 5 out of 10. I think they're going into TakeOver pretty solidly, I would say.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm gonna go 6.5 out of 10 again. Like even with the lame dud hate match, there was enough here that I did like the Bo stuff. And the main event. So, yeah, I like the show.
I'm going to knock this one down to 5 out of 10 also. Not that I hated this in a vacuum, but I needed a little bit more of a hard sell. I mean, look, I'm going to watch TakeOver anyway. It's not like it is a traditional pay-per-view that you have to sell. But why not treat it like it is? You know what I mean? And it's just they do stuff on the show that does not serve that build whatsoever. I really think that Paige Tamina match is a big blemish on this. I don't mind the Bo blow off match so much, even though that does not contribute to TakeOver because it is a pretty important piece of business. But you sort of wonder, like, could we have maybe even saved that for the following week? So there's just kind of some stuff here that it felt like they were on autopilot in some respects. Like, they did their hard sell the week before, and now this is, yeah, we got another week of TV to get through. Yeah, let's make a couple more matches and sort of plan for the best here. So, yeah, it felt a little bit... awkward, just following up on what was a pretty hot show the week before.
Yeah, I think the way that a lot of the matches were set up didn't give them a ton of time to build them either, because like the women's tournament, unless they end the tournament like a couple weeks before, which might be kind of weird, you kind of end the tournament here and go straight into the show. And then even the triple threat, we just figured out the number one contender last week. So it's like a lot of their bigger matches, they didn't have a ton of time. Where I feel like for Arrival, we kind of knew a lot of the matches a decent amount of time before. Like we knew, you know, Bo and Neville that had been building for a while. So that maybe was a little bit of a disadvantage for them too. But all right, so our awards, best match. I think I have the triple threat by a hair. It's probably my best match, the triple threat. Number one contenders match.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at too.
No argument there.
Yep. Worst match, I was kind of torn here. I think I'm going to go with the Captain Comic versus Camacho match.
That's going to be an Adam Rose for me.
Wow.
In the Jason Jordan doghouse.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Going by my star ratings, apparently, yeah, I'm with you on Captain Comic Camacho.
All right. Rising, I have Tyler Breeze because I feel like he's finally being put into something with somebody who's kind of on the... Or actually, he's just been given something besides, you know, just kind of floating around. And also at Alexa because she debuted and it seems like she's getting a little bit of a push and she looked okay.
That's not bad. I would also add Tyson Charlotte to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyson's got the rocket.
Yeah, he does.
Definitely.
He sort of owns that category.
Anybody to add, Tim? Are you good with that?
Nope, I don't have any additions there. I think we covered our rising stars.
Fallen, my main one for falling has got to be Aiden, because he seemed like he was going somewhere, and then he just got hyper-drived. I can't think of anybody else. Like, I kind of thought about Sammy, but to me, he's not really falling, just because he's not in the title match, because I think, like we discussed, there's bigger things. It's just kind of... You know, I don't think it's a sign that he's falling. It's just his moment is just being stretched out a little bit more. So my main one's Aiden, I guess I would say.
You know, we ought to add Kalisto and El Locale to Rising.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not used to having tag teams.
I know. To have to think about tag teams is just throwing us for a loop. Falling, maybe... Do we count Emma? Is she even really still part of this show?
Yeah, I could count Emma.
Yeah.
Jeez. And Renee.
I mean, Paige, we're still seeing her for some reason, so...
Adam Rose.
I don't know. It's not really her fault.
Adam Rose.
Adam Rose, according to... Yes, your heel turn on Adam Rose.
Yep. Sorry about it.
It's the story of the century here.
Okay, MVP. This is one of the tougher times to pick MVP. Because, like, part of me is like Bo Dallas because I just love his. I thought he had some good moments in the Battle Royal, and then he had the pretty good match with Big E, and then he had the big moment with him weeping and getting pissed off at the crowd. So I kind of, and almost just want to give it to him just because it's like his farewell. And I don't know if anybody else really. You know, had some standout performance. Like Neville kind of always looks good, but didn't do a lot on these. Like he had the one okay match, but like I feel like I'd be giving it to him on you know, his past stuff. I'll give it to Bo. Give him it on his way out.
I agree with all of that. Bo was the clear MVP here.
You convinced me. And this he is the highlight in these. You take these three shows and just pick them out of, you know, the overall NXT chronology, I would single him out as MVP.
All right. LVP, I went with Camacho.
Oh.
Yeah.
Adam Rose.
The Ascension? Like,
yes.
Yes, all these contenders.
I'm really sick of them. I'm sorry. I know they're supposed to be over, and I'm supposed to be on board with this dominant champion world beater thing that they're doing with them, and I'm just so not.
Yeah, I can go with that. And finally, best moment, going back to our MVP, I'm going to go with Bo's farewell, him weeping and telling the crowd that they stank.
Totally.
Gotta be.
Yes. We will miss you, Bo. All right. Well, that wraps us up here on this episode of PTB NXT. Let's go around and we can all get our shit in. What do we have to plug?
I have a couple shows. There are some on the Place Me Nation wrestling feed. They are called Jenny and the Gems. We should have a new one of those fairly soon. And Talking WCW. Hope to have one of those as well. And on the North-South Connection podcast network, you can find me on TNA Never Dies, like we talked about. We have a new episode right now. And also the Extreme Three-Way Dance. my own podcast feed's called Journey Position. My shows are there, like The Journey Through Infinity, which we should have a new one of those as well. And Talking Pop, Geek and Sassy. You heard about Pluto, Bianca's First Time, all kinds of fun stuff there. And so you can follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position to keep up with all of that.
Very good. Dem, you have anything on tap?
I'm sorry, what? no, I think Jenny pretty much covered it, doing my work for me. Check out the aforementioned Talking Pop, our I almost said our Journey into Mystery
episode. Yes.
Our Unsolved Mysteries episode. But speaking of journeys, the Journey into Mystery, the Journey Through Infinity, most recent installment of that is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy, fingers crossed. Yes. So look for that as well if you enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah, Talking WCW on the Place Be Nation wrestling feed as well. Our next episode of that, we're going to be talking The Giant. So, ooh. Yeah, kind of an unusual but pick that I am looking forward to getting into.
Me too.
That's fine.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I am at Psyche68, C-Y-K-E-6-8.
For myself, besides this podcast, on the PTB feed, I am on Highway to the Impact Zone, delving into the wonderful world of TNA. On the latest episode, you can hear about Ken Shamrock in cargo shorts making a big return, among other things. I also was on the most recent episode of Blockbuster Rewind, like I said earlier, talking about Beverly Hills Cop, which was my first time watching it, and it's a pretty good movie, at least the original is. Also on the North-South feed, I do the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, which the newest one will come out not long after this show, and I have Aaron George on, which was fun, and we talked about Judgment Day 2002, kind of a... some big stuff on that show. I'd say a little historical stuff on there, but other than that, for my cohorts on here, I'm glad that we never stopped believing in this podcast, guys. But that's all we have. Bye bye. Believe.
More like cohorts.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given thing. The more I gave, the less I got. What's the use in trying when all you get is pain? When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer, I couldn't leave her if I tried. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace.